This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
Their own goal to make. You got to be supportive of After Hours as well. Help them out, just like you helped Dead Air out tonight and KPFT during this entire fun drive. You know, as being politically active down here, I want to thank everyone, not that's pledged just here tonight, but all along the way.
You bet.
That it's pledged.
You bet.
Thank you very much for making it possible. Guys, again, good luck at that upcoming gig. That was one more time. That was at Rudyard's March 8th.
I think it's April.
April 8th. Excuse me. April 8th. A little ways in the distance, so hopefully we'll be able to fill in the gaps a little bit sooner and hear you before then.
We are available March 8th, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Thanks. We'd be happy to do your wedding if you'd have it.
That would involve getting married, for those of you listening. 713-526-5738. Keep the phones ringing. Jimmy, you got anything else to say before I hit this big button, Mark CD1?
You just said it. Keep those phones ringing. 526-5738.
And you're listening to 90.1 KPFT in Houston, 89.5 in Galveston.
Good night.
Listen to me, baby. You got to understand. You're old enough to learn the makings of a man. Am I asking too much for you to stick around? Every boy wants a girl he can trust to the very end. Baby, that's you, won't you stay? But till then, when I see lips begging to be kissed, I can't stop. Taken over my one track mind. Believe it or not, you're in my heart all the time. All the girls are saying that you'll end up a fool. For the time being, maybe live by my rules. When I settle down, I want one baby on my mind. Forgive and forget, and I make up for all lost time. Put together fine, then she's on my mind. I can't stop. I can't stop myself.
Crying, crying again. Warning. The following program contains subject matter that portrays gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered people as first-class citizens, deserving of an equal share of the American dream. Topics like this are known to piss off televangelists, backwater preachers, some talk show hosts, blue-haired biddies, several members of Congress, and other socially unacceptable outcasts like radical right-wing nut jobs. Listener discretion is strongly advised.
Have tuned into After Hours Queer Radio with Attitude, a continuing tradition here on KPFT 90.1 FM. The crew of After Hours is ready to bring you news, interviews, discussions, and music geared to the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender community and our allies. We are a diverse group here, but we all have one thing in common. We are out of the closet and urge everyone to come out of his or her closet as well. That means recognizing who you are, standing up for yourself and your rights, and being proud of who you are. We understand that this might not be possible due to age, job, or frame of mind, but remember, we are here especially for you. So kick back and relax and get ready for this week's edition of After Hours. I love to be queer. Come on, do your thing.
I'm trying to, but the lion's not even cooperating. Oh, hello, Houston, Galveston, and the world. This is After Hours Queer Radio with Attitude. Listener-sponsored, commercial-free, Pacific Radio for the Gulf Coast. Yada, yada, yada. It's past the time anyway, so, yeah, we're already screwed up. I'm Chris Harrison. I'll be co-executive producer for this evening.
And I'm Jimmy Corper. I'll be the other one.
Unless you're reporting us and then make up some other name.
Okay.
It's another one of the jam-packed shows we've had.
Yes, it is. We've got an evening with the Royals. They're ready to go. We've got Black on Black, and tonight's poetry night. So,
and we will be featuring some MBB poetry.
Oh, no kidding. We got some?
Uh-huh.
Cool.
I've got Bobby reading over it, making sure it's clean enough. Damn it if it is.
Sorry. MBB are Men Behind Bars, who write to us faithfully every week, or every other week, or whenever they can get to us.
Well, yeah, and he's a double contributor, because...
This must be Tigger. Must be Tigger. Yep, that's right, because it is still membership drive. It's been extended over the weekend, so we don't have to have one, an extra one in August. And, Tigger, one of our MBBs, has... He sent us some lovely, lovely articles.
Yeah, we'll be discussing tattoos later.
I have a special folder for tattooed guys, yes, at home on my computer whenever I can get to it. Bruce will be back Monday, so I'll be online as of Tuesday.
Thank you, Cosmo, for doing a lovely article on something or other. I just look at the pictures. I don't read the story.
I see. So we'll be doing that again later. Anyway, one little thing that we have to... Jaime sent me a letter. One little thing that we want to get to before we go to an evening with the Royals, your special monthly meeting with ICOH, is that the history series for this Sunday has had to be canceled. GCAM, the Gulf Coast Archive and Museum for Gay, Lesbian, Bisexual, and Transgender History, Inc., in conjunction with the Community Center, does an oral history every
careful.
What? Did I say anything?
Does an oral history with a member of our community once every quarter. And this month was supposed to be with Vanessa Edwards Foster. However, a glitch came up with the community center's scheduling, so we will not be able to do that. So we are rescheduling Vanessa for May. Third weekend in May, third Sunday in May, we will have Vanessa Edwards Foster. Now, let's go to an evening with the Royals. Hello, hello.
Hello.
How you doing, Jimmy?
I'm just great. How's everybody?
Fabulous.
Good. I'm going to go in there with you.
How awesome.
Good, that means I can talk dirty about him.
What a special treat.
Ah, I love the feedback.
You have no idea.
I'm sure. Yeah, that's some feedback going on.
What is that?
I think it's somebody's jewelry hitting off the...
Hello, I only have black pearls. Well, maybe a diamond or two. It's real.
You think they're diamonds.
This is real.
Real what?
A real black pearl.
Oh, I know. I've got black pearl earrings.
Well, I just got this.
Oh.
Thanks to Rose Smith. She got me addicted to this website, and I've been bidding on all kinds of jewelry.
Oh, what website would that be? I need to go there.
Bids.com, BIDZ.com.
Oh.
It has real jewelry. And since my imperial husband, Mark, was in the jewelry business, I can give him the specs, and he says, yes, this is good. And,
oh, really?
And this ring
you
is worth...
You think she listens to me?
Yeah, well, I listened to her because she said this ring was worth like $1,000, and I paid $182 for it.
Mm-hmm.
Dee Dee's just jealous.
Cool.
Love it.
Cool. I got mine in Hawaii.
Okay, shut up.
You've gotten a lot of things in Hawaii.
Yes.
He had to
dive very deep to get those pearls.
But enough about me. What's going on with ICOH?
Everything.
Oh, because it's been quiet this
Well,
past
we
year.
Had, we had a, Mark and I decided that because our schedule is nonstop, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
That our members give so much during the week. I mean, not just during the weekends. Everyone sees us Friday, Saturday, Sunday. But then we've got Monday shows and Wednesday shows and mm-hmm. Thursday meetings. We decided this was going to be the non-fundraising week.
Ah.
We took a week off.
Did it virtually.
Yes.
And we raised quite a bit of money because we sent... a little email out that said, you know, I would like to give $5 for the Cartier's Cabaret that's not happening on Monday. I'll pay $10 not to do that jukebox number for the jukebox show that's not happening on Wednesday.
Well, I can see this is a trend.
Yeah.
Never know.
It's the easy way to fundraise.
I'll give you money if you don't do this
don't
show.
Don't do it.
Welcome to the Shut the Hell Up fundraiser.
Oh, my God, Chris, that is... Oh, I found that's a great idea
yes.
for a the Shut the Hell Up fundraiser.
I can see a bunch of queens getting in line for that one.
I've got a better idea for that. All these queens that think that they're good on a mic when they MC. That's the name of that thing. Shut the Hell Up fundraiser. Put her on the mic. Give me $20 to get her off.
There you go.
We can auction off shutting people up.
There you go.
Lord knows y'all can make a lot of money. I know. I always do this. Y'all can make a ton of money shutting me up.
We may have to.
Should
do
we
that
start
sooner
now?
Than you think.
Starting tonight
with the $100 pledge. I push the magic red button here.
Thank you, Chris. She always does that.
Oh, well.
Y'all are in a drive mode here, right?
Yes, we are.
Okay, there you go.
This is membership drive.
Membership drive.
But our... actually, this week we are going back to the weekly Wednesday jukebox shows.
Oh, good.
At Mary's.
But before that, we've got our Monday birthday celebration,
yes.
right?
Oh.
Yes, we do every third Monday of the month mm-hmm. at Mary's. Our Crown Prince and Princess Royale, Jeff Smith. Okay, and he's listening, and I know he's listening to this now.
You
honey,
will not live
you
this
are,
day.
He's my husband, which really makes that even worse. Rose Smith and Jeff Wallace, and boy, I'm not getting any tonight for that one. Mark, take over. I can't.
Well, what
Jeff and Rose do. My God, she's speechless. I need to write this down.
Oh, but put it in your history book, sister.
Jeff and Rose.
It's archived, honey.
There you go.
This is going into GCAM.
Okay, Chris,
every
hush.
Every month, what they do is they host for us a monthly birthday show over at Mary's. Celebration, sorry.
Food. Although, some people eating that food could be a show.
Yeah. it's a social thing.
It's a schmooze and just have fun.
It's so much fun.
And it's open to everybody.
Yeah.
Not just members.
Right.
We celebrate the birthdays of everyone in our membership for that month.
Within that month.
Lord
right.
knows there's enough food to feed, the entire bar.
Well, we start, I mean, I got to tell you, Jeff and Rose started this, mm-hmm. and they got the membership together to bring food, and it was a potluck thing. And
it's just great.
I mean, by the end of the night, when everyone's eaten till they're stuffed to no end, we're still giving food away to the bar patrons and saving it for, you know, boxing it up so that whoever's bartending, they say, can give it away.
I never thought that I could go somewhere and eat all the guacamole that my stomach could hold.
Roger Barrera, I hope you're listening. That's guacamole that you hate.
That's right.
So good. Yeah, but he makes
it. Made with avocados.
He can make it, but he hates it.
Right. Right. So I get his shit.
That gag reflex.
But, okay, now on, okay, after the gag reflex.
Yeah.
So Wednesday, we are bringing back the Jukebox Show, and I got to tell you, it gets difficult for us to do a weekly show.
Yeah.
I mean, every Wednesday at Mary's, we do a Jukebox Show, and for those of you who may not be familiar, what we do is we show up and we pick numbers off the jukebox. We write them down. Patrons, performers, they draw numbers. They don't know what they're drawing. Mm-hmm. And then as soon as it's played on the jukebox, they perform. And we took a week off this week.
Sometimes it's hilarious.
Sometimes it's just scary.
You mix it with performers who do numbers they do know.
Right.
Yes. Yeah, we try to make it to where it's an entertaining night. If you did a whole night of 10 people who don't know what they're doing on stage, you'd walk out.
Got real close there.
Yeah, I almost said it.
Yeah, you did.
But this week it amazed me because we just wanted to take 1 week off. We wanted a break for our core members. And I can't tell you how many patrons of the bar have said, "Oh my God, what happened? Are you not doing it anymore?"
Oh, really?
Which is really good for us because we see that they're actually paying attention to us.
But it puts the pressure on to keep that up.
The fun thing about them. It not only it includes our court members, but anyone within the community that's out, wants to have a good time.
Sure.
They feel welcomed and relaxed to do that, and that's the bottom line.
But, because not only is the show entertaining, but, you know, a lot of the ICOH members are there, and we're pretty entertaining, too.
Yeah, you don't have to see what's going on stage. You can be entertained behind the bar.
Yeah, there you go.
Or on the side of the bar, on the patio.
Voice of experience.
So, what other things do you have coming up with ICOH?
Friday night, the big night.
What's the big night on Friday?
Friday night, the big night.
Yes.
24th.
24th, EJ's.
EJ's at 8:30.
Yes.
Called Together We Can.
Ah. And it is going to be hosted by Chanel and myself, mm-hmm. as well as our CPRs, and that would be Jeff and Rose.
Mm-hmm. Jeff Smith.
He's been called worse.
That's true.
Ooh.
Actually, probably in the past week, I've called
There you go. And it will continue our fundraising efforts.
For Lazarus House,
which is our RAIN beneficiary, as you are well aware.
Jimmy, you and I had this talk before we got on air about how wonderful it's been for you. So I would really love for you to share with everybody. I mean,
I have been talking about Lazarus House and folks out there who already know what it is. Lazarus House is a place for people with HIV, with cancer, with MD, wheelchair bound. This is a place you can go for exercise and nutrition. And let me tell you,
wow!
You get the exercise because you're there with maybe a partner and a trainer. And so there's no cheating at all. It's not like a big class of 30 where if you don't show up, you know, nobody notices. Yeah, like today.
Well, and the cool thing is you just said, Jimmy, is it's totally supervised.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
With a licensed trainer.
They're watching you every minute,
exactly.
And they, you know, they see, you know, how you're doing, and if you're really straining too hard,
they ease it up.
If it's too easy, they're putting more weight on, you know, because the whole idea is to strengthen up and bulk up and keep the muscle mass going.
Mm-hmm.
That's very important for anybody with HIV, anybody with cancer, MD, certainly wheelchair patients. You know, you need to exercise the muscles you can exercise, because there's quite a few of those there too.
Right.
I've noticed.
And the situation here is especially with individuals that are dealing with an immunocompromise. Mm-hmm. What happens there is you start having to burn more calories, and if your intake is not there, then that is when the muscle mass starts to break down.
And that's where the nutrition comes in.
Exactly.
So you can't cheat anymore, and you know, they let you know how many calories you need per day to keep up. And, you know, you have to send in your little diet things, and, you know, when they see all the ice cream, and you know, the incredible amounts of hamburger meat, and, you know, all these kind of fatties things.
See, mine was the Bud Lights and the shots of Cuervo.
Yeah, see, yeah. That'll get you.
Absolutely.
Too much protein there.
That's
the problem. So, you know, you're looking for that booze with protein.
I think I met him in a chat room once.
Okay, well, let's get off of Lazarus House.
But that's it. And I'm telling you, I feel so much better since I started there.
You look great.
Yeah, you do. I mean, I told you earlier, before you got there, I've noticed a huge change.
Well, because doing this also really helps your self-esteem.
That's awesome.
And being someone who hasn't exercised in over 20 years, it's been a hard row to hoe there, but, you know, I'm keeping up with it and going at my own pace, and that's another big deal. You go at your own pace.
Well, on that note, I mean, for people who are listening that may not understand that, the Imperial Court of Houston, every year we choose a beneficiary, the monarchs, the elected monarchs, which we've been here before and we've gone through all that system, that Mark and I, as the reigning monarchs, get to choose one beneficiary for the year, and Mark and I chose Lazarus House, so that at the end of our reign, all the net proceeds will go to Lazarus House. And seeing you, seeing the change, seeing everything you're going through, I go through this with fraternity brothers from college and all that kind of stuff. They say, oh, God, you're a nonprofit. You're never going to get rich. You're not going to make money. And the volunteer work that you do, it is times like this where, with you and seeing this, Mark and I get to see, this makes us feel so good that this is what we chose.
Exactly.
Because we get to see the benefits of our labor,
yeah,
and the court's labor and all of our members. We get to actually see this is what is happening. And it is amazing. Because we actually get to say, look, when I get up on a microphone in drag and say, you need to give money to Lazarus House,
yeah,
I know what it's going to.
Yeah.
And that makes it all better.
Well, I'm working on I've got a goal in mind, and I think I mentioned it before I started. I got up on stage on my birthday show, and I said, "Look,
I remember in your
my legs don't go together here anymore." Like,
I've got pictures of that night.
Oh, so I'm working on getting them to go back together a little bit more.
Well,
some
awesome.
More muscle mass there. So.
But the other thing, on top of our rain beneficiary, which I've always got to push when I'm here, which actually kind of goes into this weekend, because Sunday, Bunnies on the Bayou was hosting their VIP
reception. Yes.
Exactly. And as many board members heard, I was ecstatic and wanted to call, and the one day that I couldn't get in touch with anybody, I get this call, and I want to call somebody. I call Mark first. Voicemail. I went down the line. Everyone's voicemail. I was so mad. And finally, I got a hold of Judy and held that message, sent her into the hospital. But we are the benefit Lexi Bowen Community Fund. Exactly. I was the last person she talked to.
Before.
But she made sure that she threw in my face when she called me from the hospital. So, Lexi Bowen Community Fund, beneficiary of Bunnies this year. It's a big step for ICOH.
Wonderful.
Direct assistance fund for people, members of the LGBT community who are not dealing with HIV.
Right. And that's very important, too, because I think those members of our community have maybe been short-sighted a bit.
Absolutely.
So much of our fundraising focuses on AIDS-related stuff. Because it's in our community
it's damn hard. It's a huge pandemic for our community, but what happened is that somewhere in the process, we forgot that that's not affecting every member of our
community.
That's
right. And other
and
people
we have
other problems.
We have other issues.
Yes.
We have breast cancer. We have depression.
Do.
We have death.
Yes.
We need to focus on those people as well.
Or people who just lose their jobs.
Exactly.
And, in a bad
and they
way.
Need help.
And they need help temporarily.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And that's
what Lexi is for.
Exactly. Yeah, Mark was the co-chair last year.
I was co-chair last year, and it's just an incredible opportunity for part of the community that is truly underserved.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And a part that we really need to recognize and be able to embrace as we have with the HIV community. And the Lexi Bowen Fund allows us that capability tap in. So we're really very pleased that the Bunnies on the Bayou chose us as one of their beneficiaries for this year.
Yeah. Nice infusion there, and we can help some people.
Yes.
That's great.
You know, you know what I want to do? I'm really, you know how pushy I am. I did this to Regina when she was here.
Yes.
Because I forced her to speak with her sexy, hey, Jimmy, how are you doing voice.
Yes, I remember that.
We have the boy Montrose here.
We do.
One of our baron of ICOH. Say hello.
Hi. How's it going?
Hey, you are a live singer, and you cannot tell me that you're going to speak on a mic 5 foot away from it.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's different.
It is different, isn't it?
Because you don't have to be on top of it, actually.
Don't tell that to a bottom.
It kind of feels good when you are on top of it, though.
I won't go there.
Right.
Mm-mm. You've been there lots.
But I do want to say that Jerry is, and it's... I'm going to do this on the radio because I really think it might be actually, you know, an ICOH kind of thing.
Yeah.
Because he's going to have a lot of support from ICOH. Boy, you hate me because I'm doing this on the radio. His birthday on April the 9th.
No, my birthday's in November.
Well, but what's your boy show?
My boy show.
Your boy show, April...
The 9th.
The 9th.
Okay.
Which might, on the radio.
Yes.
It might actually go through the court for whatever beneficiary he wants.
Oh.
God, he's going to hate me. Because it wasn't until now. But now that I've said this to all the, hundreds of thousands of listeners.
Don't you love the drag queens?
Tell us about your show.
Thanks,
Chanel. You know what? I'm going to tell you what. Judy Rees, if you're listening, I know that you are clapping, screaming, doing happy dance. Stop. You just got out of the hospital. Lay down. Okay? Lay down. Do your happy dance in bed, because I know you're wanting this, too. So, Jerry, tell us about your show.
Well, the show is going to be April the 9th. The BRB.
Mm-hmm.
Showtime will be 7 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be called A Night in Hollywood.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's going to be different. And all the music performed that night is coming from movies. So if
gowns, and big hard gold cylindrical statues.
Right.
Yes.
And it's...
Batteries included?
Yes, I hope so.
Not the movie. Batteries not included, but yeah.
Okay. Well.
But it's going to be... come join the Boy Montrose on the... And actually in Midtown, you know. It's going to be a night in Midtown.
Well, it sounds like...
A night in Midtown.
Wow, I mean, I...
I think you
need to promote it differently because at that point, I don't think anyone's going to the BRB at that point. They want to see the boy Montrose
so
dancing at the Midtown spa.
Naked men drive off of Elgin there. Show to start.
Wrong wording, I guess.
Yeah, very wrong. That show went to the bathhouse really fast.
Yeah, well. Come join the Boy of Montrose on the red carpet
At the BRB.
At the BRB.
Yeah, there you go.
That works.
That's
that
better. Works.
Yeah.
Much better. Much better.
Good.
Who's it benefiting?
It is benefiting PWA Holiday Charities.
That is wonderful.
Yeah.
Very deserving.
It's going to be good.
Okay.
Okay.
I think we need to wrap this.
I think we need to.
No, we've got Black on Black waiting in the wings.
Black on Black, that's like my pearl ring.
Yes.
Black on Black.
Like pearl.
Black
hey.
On pearl.
Real.
I love it.
Real.
I love it.
I'm a drag queen with real jewelry. Step back, sister. Rose Smith, I hate you for getting me addicted to this freaking website.
Oh, no. You know, long after all of the rhinestones have faded,
This black pearl
will still be luminous.
Well, that's great. Tell that to my tax return that just disappeared because of it. Rose.
Good night, John Boy.
Good night, Mary Ellen.
Good night, Mark.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, everyone.
We will see you Monday, Wednesday, and Friday of next week.
And then also next Sunday.
But what? One big, just horrible plug that I want to give.
Sure.
Tomorrow, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., at the Pride office, 1415 California, Suite 100, is the voting for Grand Marshal.
Oh, this is the last voting.
Very last one.
It's the last day of voting, so I'm going to give a quick plug. I'm so glad you did. There are four Grand Marshal positions for the Gay Pride Parade. There's honorary for heterosexual individuals who have been supportive of our community. Jimmy and I both are past Grand Marshals, and we got to get through all these. And they're great nominees for that. I'm going to give a plug for the three other categories. The male Grand Marshal, I'm going to give my personal plug. Gerald McNeil is nominated this year, and he is a wonderful. He was the longest president of the Club 45s, a 30-year organization for the oldest leather Levi organization in the community.
He's been on the show many times.
Yes, and he was the four-year term president of the cults, which is amazing. He's also on the board of ICUH. He's on the board of governors for GCAM.
Yes.
He's the treasurer of GCAM, actually.
Yes.
He's an amazing, amazing man.
He's already planning the fundraiser.
Yeah, so it's long in the waiting. He's been nominated many times before, and I would really like to see Gerald get it. On the female side, there is really one. I mean, I've been saying this, and I don't mean to be any disrespect with this, but Judy Reeves is the Susan Lucci of the Grand Marshal position.
Yes, she is.
For anyone who is familiar with the Gulf Coast Archives and Museum, Judy is the president right now. She's also the vice chairman of ICUH. Judy, she dragged me to the Harvey Milk viewing last night, which I've already seen it 20,000 times. But
not with Rob Epstein.
You know, but Judy is so in touch with making sure that everyone in our community is familiar with our history and where we need to be going. You know, she is always the one that says, you can't forget your history, because if you do, you will never know where you're going.
And she is a part of our history. Mm. She was on the formation committee for the Names Project.
Exactly.
And, you know, she got Pete Martinez involved in that, and then he took off with it.
Exactly.
Exactly.
So she's very deserving of
this.
Yes,
she is.
It's easier for me to talk about Gerald and Judy.
Mm.
And it's harder for me to talk about the next one because y'all are carrying the evening with the Royals. But ICOH is one of the nominees for Organizational Grand Marshal. There are four nominees this year, and I'll be very good about saying that the other nominees are the Houston GLBT Chamber of Commerce.
Yes.
The Houston GLBT Political Caucus.
Yes.
Bunnies on the Bayou, which we are so grateful for choosing us as a beneficiary. And us.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to say that when you look at a group that in the past 3 years has truly represented diversity, heterosexual, bisexual, transgender, lesbian, gay on our board.
Yes.
Giving money to everything from MD Anderson Cancer Center to AFH to Lazarus House to the Children's Center in Galveston to the Men's Health Network in New York. This group has really made its mark on Houston and saying that we can all do this together. This is a group that has truly represented the diversity of our community.
Yes.
Not just the GLBT community. We have
That's right.
A lot of heterosexual members.
Yes.
And and just so he can hear me, because I'm going to say this on the mic, we will probably have a heterosexual running again for emperor next year.
Really?
Yes, Corwin, I'm saying your name on the radio. You
Whoa.
Can hear this. But we've been so supportive of every aspect, and it takes a lot. You don't see many organizations in the GLBT community that are that far-reaching.
Yes, that's
so
right.
So please, I'm giving a shameless plug. Go vote for us tomorrow from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. And 1415 California.
That's right. At the Pride office.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Go.
Thank you very much for
Thanks,
being
Jimmy.
Here.
Thank you, Jimmy.
Being with the Royals and Boy Montrose.
Thank you.
Chris, take it away.
All right. This song right here is dedicated to all those crazy fools who want to sit in glass houses and throw stones. Well, let me tell you something. You've been doing this mess for too long, and it's about time somebody fought you back. Now, I got to get ghetto on you.
Come on! You wanna battle me? Come on, baby, bring it on. You wanna hit on me? Come on, baby, bring it on. You measure that, you see, I'm not the one to be. Back down by your ignorance, bring it on. You wanna battle me? Come on, baby, bring it on. You wanna hit on me? Come on, baby, bring it on. You measure that, you see, I'm not the one to be. Back down by your ignorance, bring it on. I'm not gonna say that I'm sorry for being me. Cause just like you, I was born free. I've got the right to live my life happily. Got a man, a house, and a kid. Don't regret a thing I did. Life is too short to be living less than free. Therefore, I won't give you power over me. Tell me who died and made you G-O-D. I'm not gonna play a game. The rules are about to change. What good is a bed without the pillow? If you lock the door, I'm kicking out the window. You don't own me. You don't control me. You're the one with the problem, so bring it on. You wanna battle me? Come on, baby, bring it on. You wanna hit on me? Come on, baby, bring it on. You measure that, you see, I'm not the one to be knocked down by your ignorance. Bring it on. You wanna battle me? Come on, baby, bring it on. You wanna hit on me? Come on, baby, bring it on. You measure that, you see, I'm not the one to be knocked down by your ignorance. Bring it on. At first you told me I could not get married. You say that my kind of love mocks society. You even tell me without you there's no me. But without me there's no you. So now what you gon' do? See you been acting real crazy for too long. It's about time somebody told you what's going on. Don't you think it's time you realize that you're wrong?
Daddy's throwing stones, but you live in a glass house.
What good is a bed without the pillow? If you lock the door, I'm kicking out the window. You don't own me, you don't control me. You're the one with the problem, so bring it on. You wanna battle me? Come on, baby, bring it on. You wanna hit on me? Come on, baby, bring it on. You measure that, you see, I'm not the one to be. Knocked down by your ignorance, bring it on. You wanna battle me? Come on, baby, bring it on. You wanna hit on me? Come on, baby, bring it on. You measure that, you see, I'm not the one to be. Knocked down by your ignorance, bring it on.
And all you snitches, me and my people, we some crazy sons of bitches. And we will never die, because you multiply. So won't you quit trying to hate us, because you're the one who made us a
man. Oh my God! Who the hell do you think you are?
Come on!
Don't you know we gonna fight you back?
Come on!
Somebody needs to tell you like it is.
Come on!
You a stupid mother! Ooh!
You wanna battle me? Come on, baby, bring it on. You wanna hit on me? Come on, baby, bring it on. You measure that, you see, I'm not the one to be. Knocked down by your ignorance, bring it on.
Now what you talking?
You wanna battle me? Come on, baby, bring it on. You wanna hit on me? Come on, baby, bring it on. You measure that, you see, I'm not the one to be. Knocked down by your ignorance, bring it on.
Nah, cause see, somebody needs to be up in your face. Cause you done messed with the wrong generation. Mankind shall not lay down with mankind as he does with womankind. Whatever.
Aaron Carr.
Carl.
With Bring It On. And we're going to get into Black on Black in just a moment. But
We need to raise some money.
Yeah, we did pretty well the past 2 weeks, and I know we may be going to the well one time too many, but we do need your pledge of support at 713-526-5738.
To keep this show on the air and the station also going.
You know, I mean, we've been talking a lot about that show Radio with a Twist, and last week I actually listened to 5 minutes of it.
It's what, Gay and Lesbian Light?
I don't know. I happened to tune in during commercial time. So I listened to, first of all, a commercial for HRC.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Which had this pilot coming on over the air going, and we're climbing at 45,000 feet and cruising at an speed of 120 knots. And by the way, I'm gay. And so the voiceover from the HRC goes, you don't need to come out over a PA system like that. But talk to the person next to you. Yeah, the last thing you need to do is tell the person next to you that you're gay at 45,000 feet. And the next thing you know, blue-haired, born-again Biddy is calling the air marshal saying, I think I saw a Koran in his pocket.
Oh.
stealing a page out of the religious right. They were proselytizing.
I know. On the other hand, though, they had advertisements from Orbitz that were gay advertisements.
Oh, boy, it goes downhill from the HRC one.
Oh.
Then came a commercial for employment as sales staff at the CC station.
Oh.
Then was this long, I can't believe I don't remember her name. It was for a psychic out in the Klein area.
Oh, yes, I remember hearing that.
And, I mean, I don't know why I don't remember her name. Is she said it started off every sentence. Miss Cleo. I mean, it was on and on. And then the piece de resistance, the final commercial, was a dating website.
Oh.
That takes and it matches single mommies with single daddies.
What?
Yeah. It's called Mommies Meet Daddies.
Mommies Meet Daddies?
Yeah. A straight dating service was advertising on Radio with a Twist.
I told you it was Gay and Lesbian Light.
Then they went into This Week in Gay History. They did three topics.
Yes.
The background music was so loud, I couldn't hear what she was saying.
Well.
One of them was Arthur Ashe, she talked about, who was not gay.
No.
And then, of course, they had to go into a music interlude of Duran Duran.
Yes. Yes, I heard that same 5 minutes. But anyway, that's why you should be calling 713-526-5738 to keep a real queer show on the air.
We're not going to play Duran Duran at gunpoint.
No.
Maybe no. Pet Shop Boys. If I can get Jimmy to go out back and smoke a cigarette long enough.
Yes.
But 713-526-5738. If you're listening to us on the internet there, click on to the first page on kpft.org. There's a section where you can donate to us online. Put it on plastic, and we get credit for it.
Yep.
$30, is it 30 or 50 here?
35.
No, one we're doing for Transamerica.
Oh, 50.
$50 on plastic. We send you out the CD of Transamerica, the soundtrack.
Or Daniel Link.
Daniel Link, yeah. You give us plastic, we give you silicone.
There you go.
So it's time now. So once again,
past time 713-526-5738.
Let's give them their intro music and get it ready for Black on Black.
Welcome to the colored section. Welcome to the Negro League. Sign your name on the blacklist and know this. It's American history. See what it is to be blackmailed.
Blackmailed.
See a real life. Sign your name on a blacklist and know this, it's American history.
Thank you for joining us on Black on Black here on 90.1 KPFT, the radio station that listens to you. I'm your host, Christopher Evans, and in the studio this morning we have a host of people, and we are going to discuss relationships, and we're going to discuss infidelity during this segment. So if everyone would go around and introduce yourself, starting on my right.
We have Bernard here.
Ryan.
Billy.
Chris.
Dion.
Larry.
When did your name turn to Chris?
This is the name you were born with.
First name.
Oh, okay.
Well, Andrew. Andrew.
Okay, thank you, Andrew. Two of you, we have two couples in the studio this morning. Bernard and Ryan, you two have been together for how long?
Close to 2 years. Be married a year on this coming Thursday.
And you all actually have a certificate of...
domestic partnership.
Out of...
New Orleans.
All right. And on this side?
Actually, probably 3 years now.
Yeah. Okay.
Like really being together.
Okay.
But he's been in town since...
since August. September of last year.
Yeah. Okay. And one of our couples happens to be an interracial couple. How do you all feel about being identified as an interracial couple?
I mean, it's cool. I mean, it's...
doesn't
it's
bother me.
You know, okay. People are people.
What yeah. about your friends, family?
My family's supportive of it. I mean, they like him, so they don't have a problem with him. So
they don't know him then, right?
Well, they met him.
I'm joking. I'm playing with you. Over here.
I guess his family's much more accepting. My family, at first, they were basically just against the whole idea. They knew my lifestyle for the past 12 years, but when the whole word marriage came up, it was like... hell just bust wide open. And but now they've grown to love him and appreciate him.
Okay, what do you all feel about when people tell you that relationships between men, especially black same gender loving men, are not going to last, or they're short lived? How does that make you feel? Or have you been approached, or has anyone told you that, or said, you know, you all won't be together too long?
Well, I think you hear that every day.
Okay.
And unfortunately, It's not only in black-on-black relationships. It's in interracial relationships, white-on-white relationships. I think that it's basically the same with heterosexual relationships, except in a heterosexual relationship, you look more towards the loving husband and wife with the white picket fence and the three kids and the dog named Toto.
Okay.
And you don't look at the guy who's the gigolo dating all the women and just running over them, and the woman that's the gigolo running all over the men as well. So, but in the gay relationship, you're looking for all the negatives, and the negatives end up being brought to the forefront much quicker.
Okay. Do you think in black same gender relationships, we tend to look for the other shoe to fall? Do we go into the relationship looking for the other shoe to fall? Because me personally, I'm trying to date right now, and I had a situation where it didn't turn out cute this past week, and I think I was kind of expecting it because it was that way in the beginning. Are there any special challenges you all think you face by being couples more so than straight couples?
I think it's no different like than for maybe straight couples, are just people's perception of, you know, how what they think a couple should be.
Okay.
You know, or what maybe what your parents think a couple should be. You know, I think if most of the two people love each other and can have the same median to putting up with each other, it's all about, you know, because both sides have baggage, you know.
Okay.
It's kind of like, how can you deal with each other? Because it's not going to be perfect. You know, it's just...
And both people have to be in the same state of mind, in my opinion. It's both people have to want that common goal. They have to want, okay, I'm ready to settle down, and realize that it's not the one-night stand that, okay, we're going to have sex and kick this guy out in a couple of weeks. It's not like that. You have to be willing to compromise. And when things do get rough and you disagree, you have to more or less be willing to say, okay, we had an argument, we disagreed on something, now let's come back to the table and get over it.
Okay.
And realize why we're here in the beginning, because we love each other.
Let me ask both of the couples, what was the dating like, and how long did the dating go on before you decided to be exclusive?
Whew. Dating was very interesting, I guess, for us. We met through a mutual friend, and it was a joke on how we met. And... I'm a lighter complected black male. He's darker complected, and it was a joke. And I said, chocolate, huh? All right. Sounds like some good chocolate for dessert. And the whole night, my friend and I kept going back and forth with it. And really, in our situation, it was something strange because I was flirting all night with him, and it was like he didn't pick it up.
Okay.
And so I was telling my friend, I said, God, a cute piece of chocolate for dessert, but is he Barbie? I mean, he doesn't catch on. And it was a love at first sight, really.
Okay.
And our dating lasted for about, not long, about 6 months. And then we decided to get married and do the domestic partnership thing, and we've been going strong for a while now.
Andre R.
Actually,
how was the dating?
It was good. We met, I met him through a friend of mine in San Antonio. We just kind of became friends, and it was like a long-distance thing, you know.
Okay.
And it went off about almost
3 years.
Almost 3 years.
And then we decided to move in together.
Okay, how long have y'all known each other?
Probably since...
Since 2001.
Oh, okay. Now, for the single people in the booth, dating for you, last 6 months, how has it been?
Mine's, hasn't been a, you know, I haven't been dating a whole lot the last 6 months.
Okay.
Nor have I.
Okay. I don't believe it, but I'm going to go with that. Dating for me for about the last 6 months has been, it's been tedious. I've been very, I've been more active at 35, dating only, at 35 than I have been all my life, and I'm really enjoying it. I don't see the difficulty, in relationships I actually thought were there previously. You try to get to know people, and whether or not you're into them, you learn that pretty fast and then you move on. As far as, let's talk about infidelity. Have any of the couples ever experienced infidelity? And we won't talk about your current relationship for fear this is a small space. I don't want to dredge up any memories of anything. But maybe in previous relationships, how did you handle that?
I don't know. I mean, it's pretty much, it was a tit for tat thing. Okay, you do your thing, I do mine, you know. I think the last relationship, I just put my heart into it and kind of, I think I put more into it than he did, and it's like when it fell apart, it just like fell apart, you know.
Okay.
It was a situation I think I went in expecting more.
Okay.
I thought it was going to be one way, and then it turned out to be something else. So this go around, I'm just like leaving myself open to just take one day at a time.
Okay.
You know, not to put no more than not take away no more.
Okay.
You know, just take it one day at a time. Some days are better than others. You know, some days are worse than others, but you have to kind of, like you say, you make up your mind you're going to do this.
Okay.
I think as far as infidelity, I think everybody has had that relationship that they just knew was going to work, and this person, you were going to be with them for the rest of your life, and you were going to build that good relationship together, that big house on a hill, and infidelity played a part. But it's also that, it's my opinion, in the gay lifestyle, when infidelity does come into play, it's okay, you did your thing, let's just break up and just get it over with, rather than saying, okay, it was a mistake and you made a mistake and I'm gonna forgive you for it because I love you. Now, first time, shame on you. Second time, shame on me.
Okay.
You know, but sometimes you have to be willing to forgive that person for a mistake that they did make and go forward with it.
What are your expectations for your current relationship? Or do you have any?
Yeah, I have quite a bit, just to grow as far as career-wise, as far as spiritually, you know, and just all around just having just longevity. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm looking for, you know, to just have a person to just be by your side, you know. That's, I think, longevity and just career and this emotional support, you know, that's
okay.
What I'm looking for.
Anybody else? Well, what are your expectations for the relationship?
My expectation is, like, I expect them to be more. Well, she is my best friend. Like he said, with the career thing, because we're looking eventually to open up a restaurant, and I want to be their partner, their person that I can turn to for anything that I need, to be my right-hand man.
Okay.
I guess for me, I'd look for a lot of the same things, the best friend. It's a little bit different for us because before we were together, I have an 11-year-old daughter. and I need someone to be strong support for my 11-year-old daughter. She knows about my lifestyle, and as a matter of fact, her mother is a lesbian as well. And she knows she's very smart, and she understands it much more than people would think. And I need someone to be there for my daughter as well as me, and to understand that we raised this child together. And it's been great.
Okay, now as far as longevity of relationships, do you see yourself being in a lifetime relationship, or do you go in with the expectation that it'll only be for a certain amount of time? Or do you go in with plans or an expectation that this is someone that I plan on being with for the rest of my life? Or do you not even think that far ahead? I believe somebody said we're just taking it a day at a time.
Well, when I say it a day at a time, because, you know, as I say, tomorrow's not promised, but you want to have some type of goal to look forward to 6 months down the line, a year down the line, to have some type of progress. You don't want to be at the same place you was a year ago. You know, you want to always try to strive for progress between some kind of progress between the two of you.
Okay.
You know? I think that's the whole thing of a relationship, is just you start at one place and you end at another. You know, I think it's all up to the individuals how far they want to go. You know, I want to be in it for the long haul.
Okay.
You know, but I think it's all up to the individuals. You know, what do they see?
Anybody else?
Definitely long haul. Okay. I truly, when I first started this, like I said, we met, we monogamously dated, and it was a little harder. Just like with the other couple, we were a long-distance relationship for a while, and we just recently moved in last May.
Okay.
And, you know, we had a number of hurdles to cover. I mean, the day before he moved in, we had a hurdle, and we climbed through it.
Okay.
And it's all the thing of that I saw this person as my companion, I saw this person as my best friend, and really, I wouldn't want to wake up next to anyone else. I wouldn't want to share my joys with anybody else but this person. And that's a very good feeling to have.
How do you all feel about public displays of affection being a couple? Are you comfortable?
Very comfortable with as they call PDAs. It's very funny. I worked for a Fortune 500 company, and everyone there knows about my husband. And it's not a fear for me at all. As a matter of fact, I think they respect it a little bit more, because it's the way I carry myself, and it's more or less I'm not ashamed of who I am, and my personal life does not affect my professional life.
Now, let me ask this. Do the public displays of affection cease in certain settings, or when you're in certain places? Because I think I've been with you all somewhere, and we were at a restaurant, a Burger King or something. I'm like, they're getting a little snuggly in front of all these people.
It doesn't bother me.
It doesn't. Do you think you're possibly trailblazing for same gender loving couples when you actively participate in public displays of affection while you're out in public?
You know, I don't think that it's the thing of that it's one of those things that we have to put out there, but at the same time, I feel that it's something that should not be hidden. Why should you be ashamed to hug your mate, or to give your mate a peck on the cheek or something like that? Why should you be ashamed to hold your affection back when every day you'll see a guy propose to a young lady in a restaurant, and the next thing they do is kiss and everybody applaud?
Okay.
You know, it's love is love deep down. And it's the thing of whether you're being monogamous to that person, whether you see that person as your life mate, and if you're making a go of it. And I don't think it should be hidden at all.
I have to step in one quick second here.
Community-based, listener-sponsored, commercial-free radio. This is Pacifica Radio, KPFT, Houston, 90.1 FM.
And this is our pledge drive, 713-526-5738. Call in your pledge of support for radio that's local, live, here in Houston for our community. What you're hearing now is not piped in from Atlanta or New York or Los Angeles, we don't break for commercials. We break because the FCC tells us to, and that's it. We're back to black on black.
Thank you. We just shipped them in from Atlanta.
Really?
Well, that's our little dig on that other show that's on commercial radio. They've got one host that's in Atlanta, one that's in New York, and then one in Los Angeles, and they play Duran Duran. And, you know, do commercials for Miss Cleo's up in the out in the boonies and that sort of thing. And we don't do that sort of thing here.
Who's the voice?
The voice on that?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just new KPFT with promo.
I need you to find out for me. I feel a date coming on.
Well, it's a nice change of pace because lately all the promos they've given us have had this... I don't know if they went to the British consulate and said, could you spare a few people? Or, you know, the cast of Oliver Twist came in here and did some promos for us. But it was all this British voices. And it's like, I got that one is like, it's a nice baritone, deep voice there.
Yeah. Let me see the one on
James Earl Jones.
Yeah, we like to refer to that as the three ball voice.
I'm a freak. It's right up my alley. No, I'm just joking. Back to relationships, to the single people, how important is it to you to find that relationship, or is it something that you've gotten to a point where it's not even an issue anymore?
Well, actually, I've gotten to the point where it is an issue now. It hadn't been an issue before. I've been kind of casually doing things of late, and now I kind of want to meet somebody special and settle down, but I can't do that until after I come back from Rio.
Oh, and why is that?
It may be in Rio, though.
We won't even call you. Really?
You know, it may be in Rio. You never know. So.
For myself, it's okay. If I find one, that's okay. And if I don't, that's okay also. You know, I'm open to meeting people and experiencing new things. So if it happens, it happens. If not, then that's okay too.
Ooh, new things.
Do you think the single life is just what some people, that's just their vein? Being in a monogamous one-on-one relationship is just not something for everybody. Do you think the gay lifestyle has pushed this concept that, you know, you need to be in a monogamous relationship, you know, you need to have a one-on-one relationship? Do you feel that pressure?
I don't think it's just the gay life. I think it's just sometimes us as people, period, feel that people need people and everyone needs someone. But finding the right individual is sometimes a little hard for some of us to do, so... You know, if it happens, okay. If I don't, then I'm satisfied with self. So.
Okay, so everybody here, let me ask you, did you feel your part of, to the couples, a part of coupling up, was that just something you naturally wanted to do, or did you feel a sense of pressure to couple up or be a couple with somebody? Or is it just something that you naturally feel like that's comfortable for you?
I think with us, it was just, we've been known each other so long.
Mm-hmm.
It was just like, either we're going to do it or we're not.
Okay.
You know, it's just,
we just got used to each other after, like, 3 or 4 years of, like, you know, dating and, you know, just, I guess, like, when I didn't come into it, like, thinking that I would get into it. I guess it just happened, mm-hmm. and I just got used to him. So that's why we just became a relationship, because I didn't come with the expectation. I just wanted to be friends, but it just, because I had just gotten out of a bad relationship too, and that person cheated on me and it really hurt me. So that's why I just like kept my guard up, and I just, you know, like I wasn't as trusting as I used to be.
Okay.
So like when this one came up, I didn't really think it would amount to really anything except just a friendship. But
okay.
After a while, I just got used to him. So it just happened gradually.
Okay. I have always been an advocate, and anybody who knows me about, you need to be, not that you need to be in a relationship, but they're like the best thing in the world to be in is relationship. And now at 35, I don't know if I believe in that so much about being in a relationship. I'm very I'm becoming more and more comfortable with the dating and seeing other people. So I don't, I'm in a quandary now whether or not I'm supposed to be in a committed relationship or if that's something I really do want.
But is that for a variety purpose? Is that because you may feel like being with a more masculine guy on one night and then a more professional or subtle or feminine guy next? Or is that because of your mood swing that you feel like you don't want to be in a committed relationship and that you want the variety of dating?
No, I think it's actually gotten to a point where I'm so comfortable with me and my space now. Till I think inviting somebody into that space now would require a lot of work on my part, and I don't think at this stage I'm really ready to do that. I think if I met somebody and we were able to sustain, you know, you keep your place, you keep mine, but there's a level of commitment that I would still want that I don't think still dating would be fair to ask someone.
You know, for us, we met on a friendship level, and the weekend that we met, he never thought he'd see me again afterwards. And we never thought that it would go this far.
And I just want you to know, y'all, they are all hugged up. Making me sick, but go ahead.
But one thing I'll say is we're originally from New Orleans, and due to Hurricane Katrina and things like that, it has made us so unbelievably stronger. And I've caught myself saying after, if we've been through this together, there's nothing that'll stop us from being together. And, you know, now we find the excitement. We find the happiness of before we met, I've owned my home for 11 years. And now it's our time to go back and rebuild our house from scratch. And okay, honey, what do you want to do with this? Okay, honey, what do you want to do with that? You heard us earlier saying, okay, what rooms do I get to design and what rooms do you get to keep?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's more camaraderie, and it's more partnership and building together now. And it's to the point now where it's not yours and mine's, it's all ours.
Okay.
I mean, even when it comes to my daughter, it's our daughter, and she loves him almost, hell, I'd say it's more than she loves me. She loves him quite a bit, and, you know, that's her protection.
Okay. Most difficult aspect of being in a relationship to the couple, what do you find to be the most difficult aspect?
I think with us is we have some of the same personalities, so. It's like sometimes we like being together, other times we go apart, then we get back together, you know.
Okay.
It's kind of like we won't stay under each other too long because we get under each other's nerves and we kind of come apart together. I think that's how we balance.
Okay.
I think our most difficult that we have is when one of us is upset and the other person try to cheer them up, they try their hardest and it don't seem to be working. But you get a phone call from another mutual friend and they just cheer up. And it's like, why I can do that to you to make you happy, to make you smile.
Okay.
It's because I see you every day and all day every day. And
yeah, I feel that way too. I feel that way too.
What about validation? How has being in this relationship validated you? Or has it validated you?
You know, I think validation comes from within oneself. I think this is just an attribute to me as a person. This is someone who has added to my happiness. Because if you're not happy with yourself, there's no way that you can accept a partner to add to your happiness.
Okay.
So, like I said, as far as validation, that comes from within. And my husband, he's just added a whole lot of happiness to me.
Okay.
I think with us is this is like challenging me to just look at myself and just to as far as intellectually and emotionally, just, you know, challenging to new feelings. Mm-hmm. And just new places, you know. I probably wouldn't have gone with anybody else. As far as just opening my mind to new things, you know.
Okay. What is your reason for being in a relationship? Your personal reason for being in one? And what do you think the purpose of a relationship is?
Well, as far as purpose, I think the purpose of a relationship is for you to meet someone who will be your best friend and someone who you could depend on and rely on, and to actually watch that friendship just continue to grow and continue to go, like he was saying, in areas that you never thought it would go before, and okay. to enjoy that from each other. That's really where I've seen us go.
Anybody else? The purpose of the relationship?
I feel it's mostly, you know, no one should be alone, really. I think everybody needs somebody in some
companionship.
Yeah. I mean, it comes to a point, especially, I just had a birthday, and I was like, wow, you know. You get to a point that you need somebody. I mean, I wouldn't just say for companionship, but you do need that type of camaraderie. You need to, you know, somebody can understand you on your level, you mm-hmm. know. Someone that knows your ups and downs, you know. Someone, you know, that's how we get along. I mean, it's just... And so we have a relationship on a lot of different levels. I mean, you know.
The state of black same-gender loving relationships, where do you see it on a scale of 1 to 10? 1 being non-existent, 10 being extremely well. Where do you think black same-gender loving relationships stand right now?
I think a negative 1. And I think it's a lot of different things that we end up putting ourselves into.
Okay.
As far as looking for love in all the wrong places.
Okay.
And what I mean by that is we tend to go to a club, have a couple of drinks, meet a guy, say, oh, he's cute, end up hanging out with that guy, maybe turn it into a one-night stand or a couple of dates. The next thing, by the time the week's over, you're in love. And that's not what it's about. That's really not what it's about. You can't even say, what's that person's favorite color? What's that person's favorite food? And until you know some things that are just way off the beaten path and not gaily associated, I would say, you know, you may know what that person's favorite hangout spot is or favorite club is or favorite, you know, things like that. But it's actually getting to know that person as a person and not getting to know that person just in the quote-unquote gay lifestyle.
Anybody else?
I have to add to that. I think with us it's like we went some places tonight, you know, and it's a lot of straight people. Sometimes he has a problem with it, and I have to tell, remind him that people are people. And as far as the gay scene, you know, I think we pigeonhole ourselves because you're gay, you only can do gay things, or people say this is what you can do. You know, you can go anywhere and do whatever you want to do. You know, okay. I think we pigeonhole ourselves as far as couples, as okay. far as just...
Yeah, but I think there's certain challenges we have because we're an interracial couple, so we just have to deal with, like, cultural differences, okay. you know? Like there's some things that are different, like the way my family is and the way his is, and it's just cultural differences, too, you know? So it's a little bit more challenging. And And with interracial gay couples, I think it's more challenging because you just have cultural differences between you and your partner.
Okay.
So that's a little bit more challenging. But it's more to overcome, but, you know, I think it's well worth it, you know.
How do you all solve issues that come up that are based on cultural differences?
The way I do it, I just have to... I think put myself like in the third place and just like look, be the outside man looking in. Sometimes I have to just like, well, okay, you know, I'm here in this situation. Let's make the best out of it. I think with my family, a lot of them are like the old Bible thumpers, you know, like the old, you know, we just, instance, I had a cousin of mine pass, and, you know, she wasn't too... You know, she's like my mother's sister almost. They were that tight. And she, you know, she wasn't too cool with me and him and, you know, just me in general. And I find that my family's bottom was like very hypocritical and, you know, but they did their thing. Okay. But it was not cool for me to do my thing, you know.
Okay.
And it was just a thing, once they got to know him, mm-hmm. you know, it was all cool, but it was like, I think with a lot of especially in black, the older generation, I think they still have that civil rights mentality of, you know, it's black this and black that, and like people are people, you know, you fall in love with who you fall with.
If I can interject for a second, I mean, I understand a lot of what you're talking about, especially what you're talking about with the Bible thumpers and things like that. We went to a funeral recently for a friend of ours who passed away, and his family did not know his lifestyle. Well, they didn't want to make it known that they knew his lifestyle. But I feel that a lot of people are taught this in a religious aspect as well, because the minister kept referring to homosexuality in a negative way, and he even referred to it as, if you brought a dog into the church and it meowed like a cat, you would call a scientist and say that's wrong, and that's what he compared homosexuality to. But it was like he was the first one to cast a stone on it, but he had forgiven himself for being shot three times and being a drug dealer and a drug user, and he feels like that all his wrongs are corrected now. But you can sit here and cast stones at someone not only who has passed away, but the people who are mourning his death. And, you know, I feel that we're in a society now to where everyone is ready to cast a stone at homosexuality and couples, but they're not able to admit their own faults and understand that, hey, everyone has their own faults and everyone needs to live their own life. And if these two people are happy, let me mind my own business.
Okay. Uh-huh. And interracial dating, have you all experienced any ostracization?
Am I pronouncing that right?
Ostracization.
Yeah, that word.
from
friends, though. Friends, you know, people who you were friends with, and once they find out you were dating someone outside of your race.
Not really. Because my whole friend scale, I have a lot of friends from different races. You know, even when I was, it's been like that for years. I mean, some of my friends know I'm gay, some of them I don't. It's just where I carry myself. It's just, I'm very omnipresent, you know, where I can just fit. That's just my personality. I can just fit in wherever.
I have a question for the other couple. Do you find where you're accepted better by your Caucasian friends or your non-Caucasian friends?
Probably by, I don't know. I mean, like, his family accept. I mean, we're cool, but it's, I don't know. I find more, I have more problems, like, with probably the black community.
Right.
Like, more than anything, like, how could you, you know, or, you know, what has he got that I don't have, you know? And it's like, that's just the type of guys that come to me that's mostly, you know, Latin guys, Italian guys, or whatever, you know, just the way I look, you know, I'm just...
Oh, so you're international?
I'm not saying I'm international, but you know, I'm part black, Cuban, like, you know. Right. So it's like, you know, I have a lot of different looks to me, and it's like some people think I'm Louisiana. I'm like, no, you know.
I kid
you. Or some people think I'm from Atlanta. I'm like, okay, you know, but I have more problems I'd like to. Like the brothers, you know, all dogs, yeah. You know, you can't, you know.
You a sellout.
Yeah. You know, you supposed to love, you know, I'm like.
Love your color and be with one of your color.
Yeah, you know.
Right.
Oh, even my mother would tell me, why you can't get nobody, you know, like your complexion, you know, you have to go out and, you know.
And that would be very hard for us to do. I would have to stay in the sun for quite a while.
What is the best part about being with someone that you love and that you cherish? What has been the best part about that for you?
Sharing your highest highs and your lowest lows, and always knowing in your mind and your heart that no matter what, even if that person is upset with you, that they'll always be the first person to have your back.
Now, let me ask another question. Who do you use for a role model as far as being in a same gender loving relationship, or do you have a role model?
You know, I can't honestly say that I have a role model, but I think that it's very important to turn yourself into a role model and to turn your relationship into a modeled relationship. You've met a number of our friends recently, and we have a family structure that we have set up. And I think it's very important for the older people to mentor the younger people who are going through this. And I think that if we start doing things like that, it'll shape the way that it'll shape the way that we do things from then forth. We have a group of people. I told you my most recent experience. I have one of the guys been on 12 years. He's like a child to me. He's like a son. And he's going through the process of, he took his HIV test and he might be possibly HIV positive. And to actually help him and talk to him and mentor him to say, where do I go next? When he asked me that question, that was the hardest part of my life.
Okay.
That made me feel like my daughter actually came to me and said, Dad, I'm HIV positive. Where do I turn next?
Okay. Well, what about you all as far as mentorship? Who do you use as a role model for your relationship?
I don't know. Actually, my mentor has passed, actually. She was a friend of mine, Carolyn. She helped me come out, like, when, like, the late 80s, early 90s, when it was just, it just wasn't heard of, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think just through my highs and lows and just learning and living, and I think that I can tack on some of his stuff. Okay. As far as my experiences, It's been a long road, but you know, I feel that we can mentor a lot of people. I wish there was a lot more people to mentor, you know, help me along the way, because I had to learn a lot by just trial and error, you know.
So who do you look to, or how do you learn to be a good partner?
I think it's just through trial and error. If it just don't work, try something else. Let's try. Always have a plan B or a plan C. If this doesn't work out, let's do this. You know, I think when you run out of directives, you have problems, you know. I always keep the lines of communication open, you know.
Okay, and what do you think is the secret to keeping communication open? Because I'm going to tell you this. I think there is a problem with people not being honest in relationships for fear of losing the person. So I don't... Mm-hmm. Give you all of the truth, or I don't give my whole truth feeling because I'm afraid that I may say something that will make you mad and then you'll walk away. So we have people in relationships walking around giving each other half truths out of fear, and you can't be in a relationship and be fearful at the same time.
That's true. That's like something that we say, if you're upset with me about something, let me know. No matter how small you think it may be.
Okay.
Because a lot of things are like a snowball effect. It just keep rolling into something bigger and bigger. And this thing, you know, you're at each other's throat over something as small as who left the toilet seat up or down.
Okay.
Yeah, or I just think that what can destroy a relationship is lies. And if y'all lie to each other, you know, that can destroy a relationship. So I think it's imperative to be honest. Otherwise, because if you start lying to each other, then that'll destroy the relationship.
But I think that's where that friendship comes in, and that person being your best friend. Because think about how many times you called your best friend and you told your best friend everything that happened on that date that you went on last night. And when you break down that fear and you actually look at this person as, hey, that's not only my mate, but that's my best friend. You don't feel that uncomfortability of not being able to tell the truth in everything that you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Now, how comfortable are each one? Are you at a stage now where you're very comfortable and this person is your friend? So which one comes first, the friend or the lover?
Friends, without a doubt. Friends. That's how me and him became. We were friends first, then we became lovers.
Now, by becoming friends first, that alleviates what problem?
Communication.
Okay.
It alleviates a big communication problem, because when you get to know that person on a friendship level, you start sharing things, and it is almost like a snowball effect, because when you share one thing and you sit back and you might say, I never thought I would tell somebody that before. I've never done this in another relationship before. And you actually see how it actually opened a dialect.
Mm-hmm.
You're not afraid anymore.
Okay.
It opens up a gate.
Well, it usually brings it. Sometimes, a lot of times it brings things out of you you never thought you had.
Okay.
You know, especially with us. I mean, it's things I'm doing now that I never thought I would do. You know, as far as career and spiritually and stuff like that. You know, it's a lot of new things.
Okay, now I'm going to put each one of the couples on the spot. I'm sorry, single people. Not y'all, no. I'm going to ask a question. I'm going to put you on the spot. Bernard, could you tell me the most important thing up to this point in the relationship that you've learned about yourself because of the relationship?
Well, I can say I always had confidence in myself. But with Ryan behind me, pushing me, it's like giving me that extra push that I need to get over that mountain or over that hill or something that I didn't think I could do by myself.
Mm-hmm.
But knowing I have the confidence and have him behind me, giving me that extra push.
Okay. Dion?
I think it's because our age difference. I think I have like a big brother almost. It's a trial role too. It's like a friend lover, friend best friend, like loving him like a big brother because I look after him.
Okay, did you listen to my question?
Yeah, I listen. Okay. I'm listening.
The most important thing you've learned.
Most important.
Being in this relationship up to this point.
I think.
Did I just read him on the air?
I think you did.
I think I did. Wrong show, I'm sorry. I think it's me being unselfish, really. Because I'm not just looking just for me. You know, that I have someone else to care for, you know. Because I was always, like, into me, you know.
Okay.
I think that's the most.
Now, the other two, I'm going to put you on the spot. The best thing that you love about your partner.
The one thing that I love the most about my partner is that he always, no matter what, and he just brought this up about how he seems not to be able to cheer me up when I'm at my lowest point, but in actuality, that's where it starts at.
Okay.
It starts at with him making, well, adding to me being happy again, and just to know that he's there.
Okay.
And sometimes when he referred to the point about a friend calling and a friend cheering me up, it may appear like that, but it's the opportunity for me to vent to someone outside
okay.
of what's going on. And it just makes it lighter. But the ability for him to make me happy at my lowest point.
Andrea.
The one thing I like about him the most, he has a way of cheering me up when I'm down, and since he understands me, you know, I like the fact that, you know, he can brighten my day, even when I'm at my lowest.
Okay. Now, if the relationship were to end,
it won't.
Okay, but if it were, what would have been the most defining moment of the relationship for you up to this point right now?
The most defining moment of the relationship would be that I had the opportunity to grow with someone who I wasn't afraid to be myself with. I wasn't afraid to do the silliest things that I would have never done in front of my friends or would have thought that someone have looked at me strangely on. And to know that that person, even though they may have sat back and said, this idiot just did the dumbest thing in the world, but to know that we could sit back and laugh at it and we had the opportunity to grow together.
Over here?
I think it'd be a boy's you. I would think the most, for some second words, I would be around a person like this guy. It's a bloopers here. I'm like lost his word. I'm lost
Andreas,
his word.
Do you know the most defining moment of the relationship?
The most defining moment?
I'm lost his words tonight.
Okay, I guess you don't.
No.
I think you just read him, too.
For the single guys, do you think your friendships are interrupting your potential to be in a relationship, an intimate relationship? And do you think you substitute your friendships for intimate relationships?
No. I don't feel that way because my friends are my friends, and my if I'm out looking for a potential relationship, if there is a potential for a relationship, that wouldn't have anything to do with my friendship.
Okay.
Because the friends will still be friends, and the lovers will be lovers.
Okay. Larry. Okay, not Larry. I had an experience. I was having a date. Someone promised me that they were going to come over to my house. And I had made plans with a friend. And being in a desperate mode, I canceled those plans with the friend. Stop shaking your head. I know it was wrong.
Yes, it was.
I canceled the plans to be with the friend to make room for this potential relationship person to come into my life, and they didn't show up. A couple of weeks later, my friend that I put off got me somewhere by myself and told me he was very hurt that how dare I move him out of the way who had been there, you know, and will be there to make room for somebody I had just met. And at first I want to go off on him because I want to know, you know, this was a potential for me. Don't you want me to be happy? But I soon realized that he was absolutely correct. I have moved friendships and jeopardized friendships for a potential relationship. And I'm here tonight to tell you it's never worked. That's why I'm by myself tonight.
And if that person was a potential then? There'll be a potential in a future
date. That's what I have learned, that you don't change your routine or what you're going to do to accommodate somebody that you're possibly interested in that just came in. And I think it's good for them to see that you're not desperate, because when you do that, you are indicating that you're desperate. When you're willing to move some of the most important people in your life, you move them out of the way, or you change plans with, you know, plans that had already been set in stone to make room for somebody. And then you get into this with this person and you figure 6 weeks later, oh my God, I don't like you at all. Why am I even being bothered with you? And then you have to go back and reconcile with the friends that you've pushed to the periphery of your life, trying to make room for this dud that came in. So to all of you in the booth who are my friends, I do apologize if I've ever done that to you before. Put you off to the periphery of life for a dud. I do apologize. Oh, my. You make it sound like I'm making a habit of doing that. And I don't. Actually, I don't. But I certainly want to thank you all for coming tonight. What I wanted to do with this is to insist that there are relationships out there that are working, whether they be interracial or whether they be those with a... How far apart are you all in age?
10 years.
10 years, that they can work. I think there's a myth in the black community that relationships amongst black same gender loving men are not sustainable, that we're incapable of doing that. And I want people to know that we can do it. Our friend Larry makes the statement all the time that people don't want to do the work that's necessary and that it takes to make relationships last. And I was once a supreme advocate that, you know, I'm going to be in this not for a long term, but I want a lifetime relationship. And what I've learned, it's not the longevity of a relationship that makes it successful, but it is the intensity of the people involved and their character at the end of the relationship. Am I a better man for knowing you? Are you a better man for knowing me? That makes a successful relationship. And whether it was 3 days, 3 months, 3 years, or 30 years, that is the goal, and that's what we're looking for. So I want to thank you all for coming. Anybody have any last comments about the show?
Thank you for inviting us, actually. Yeah,
thank you. Thank you.
I thank you all for coming. Again, this is Christopher Evans with Black on Black on 90.1 KPFT, the radio station that listens to you. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you again next month.
Welcome to the colored section. Welcome to the Negro League. Sign your name on a blacklist and know this, it's American history. See what it is to be blackmailed.
Okay. We.
Whoa.
Oh. Yes. So that was another edition of Black on Black with Christopher. He really does a great segment. Have you noticed that?
I actually pay attention to the show sometimes.
Good for you. Good for you.
No, it is. It's this has always been one of our great segments we've had.
I know.
And even when we were so afraid of him filling the pumps there of Dionne Redmond.
And he is doing it very well. She should be jealous.
Bye.
Bye. This is After Hours, your queer radio program right here on KPFT Houston.
Locally produced.
Yep.
Listener sponsored.
Yes. And unlike that show that's on Saturday nights from 10 to midnight, we are all queer. Yes. And we do it. We don't get money. We don't get paid to be queer on TV, on radio. We're here because...
I think if people listen to the show enough times, they'll realize that.
Yeah, we're here because we have the passion for our community and all who are in it.
And like I said, you know, we're locally produced. We're live. You do drive down Lovett Boulevard here, old Radio Road in Houston, Texas.
And here we are, sitting in the window.
Yes, behind me.
Hopefully bulletproof glass. Fortunately, we've not had to have that proven.
Not last week I thought we were.
Yeah, you never know. And I'm really disheartened because we are more than halfway through the show, and our phone has not rung once with a pledge.
Yeah. Well, you know, this is going to sound very strange to people who know me. I'm going to play the optimist. The fact that, you know, we normally do it for 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And we made our goal the 2 weeks that we normally do it.
Yes.
And this is kind of a bonus. And, you know, this is hopefully that with these couple of days extra tacking onto it, we don't have to come back in the summer.
Yeah, like we did for that little 1 week pledge drive.
The mini pledge.
Yeah, the mini pledge drive. So I really urge you to get onto the phones right now, 713-526-5738. We've got folks who've been waiting all during the show to answer this phone with your pledge of support. 713-526-5738.
We even have someone from Pasadena. You know, supposedly I said some naughty things about the East Side.
I heard that.
Yeah, this is probably one of the people who's, you know, the bad side on Pasadena. Our engineer David is here.
And I've also Big heard Roy's the comment here. That they've seen more KPFT and rainbow stickers on cars in Pasadena than anywhere else in Houston.
Well, they need something reflective there to cut through the smog.
Ooh, ain't that the truth? Ouch, ouch.
Hey, I visit there and come back with a hacking cough.
I live there.
That's right.
I just
engineer David lives in Pasadena, so we know there are queers there.
Yeah, and quite a few. They come into my job all the time.
So why aren't those folks giving us a call at 713-526-5738? You know, we've got an MBB, that's a man behind bars, who is a sustaining member. That means that an MBB can come up with the money. And it's not in the form of money, of course. It's in the form of what's very, very, very dear to anybody behind bars. Those are stamps.
Those are stamps you hear.
Yes.
The microphone is licking the self-adhesive stamps.
And every month, he sends his pledge in.
And, he's even planning for the day that he becomes a free worlder. Let's see here. I'm sending the second batch of 15 stamps with this. I heard last week that KPFT may not be doing its summer pledge drive, which is when my pledge from last year ends. So just in case, I'll go ahead and re-pledge now.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll keep sending stamps as long as I'm here.
Wow.
After my release, I'll switch over to cash. Depending on what he can find to work once he gets out into the free world. This is part of Tigger's letter. Let me start off here from the beginning. He's just glad that another Valentine's Day is gone. I hope that all of you had a much better one than I did. And I hope this is his last, my last one.
Me too. Me too.
And we do as well. He enjoyed the Diane Rose show. It's not Rhodes like the scholarship. It's Rose like the flower.
R-O-S-E. Yes.
He thinks she's fabulous. He's hoping this will now get his lesbians to listen in. And he's hoping the reception will cooperate, which he'll definitely, hopefully, it's cooperating, because I believe he's a contributor on the second, on the next segment, too, correct?
Yeah.
I don't have your mic on. You can just not, you just wave your head at me.
Uh-huh.
Just wave that mop at me.
Love you, too.
So, yeah, he sent some poems in, and he cut it short because he was going to mail us off in time to get here.
Well, you know, Jaime also wrote in, and while he didn't send any of his own poetry, he sent some poems from Walt Whitman that he really, really liked. I'm going to pass them on to David.
Oh, ooh.
Probably what I'll do is we pretty much we've got sort of figured out what we're going to do this week, because I'm going to do Jean Cocteau, although I forgot the poem. But I'm going to do a segment on Walt Whitman, and I'll include him on that particular
fabulous
thing.
Fabulous.
And another time here, we'll get to the rest. We'll get to Tigger's discussion he pulled out of Cosmo.
Oh,
on,
wow.
From Cosmopolitan Magazine. For it's
definitely some poetry in that.
Ooh, in motion.
Yeah. Cosmopolitan, they did a lovely story on tattoos and what they say about him.
It's a very nice
And to keep all of this going, though, we need your pledge of support. 713-526-5738. There's no other show like this in Houston. There's no other show like this in most other cities, including San Francisco, as a matter of fact.
This station has more queer programming than the rest of the Pacifica network combined.
Yes.
And we're talking Berkeley and New York City.
Yes.
It's so queer around here, it's a wonder the walls aren't painted in daisies.
I'm surprised we don't have a $3 bill level of membership.
Exactly.
Well, send in your $3 a week pledge to queer... Hey. There's a promo for next time.
There's a promo. Exactly.
Yeah, picture. So, once we finish hawking, I'll give you your intro
That's
music.
What I figured.
Yes.
So, once again, 713-526-5738.
We really need your pledge of support. Oh, I do not want to close out this show at 4 o'clock with zero on the books. We need to show management that, we're a viable show, that we need to be on the air, that people really
We know,
want us here.
We know y'all are sick of hearing the money pitch.
Oh, I know.
Towards the end of it, everybody's like, okay, I've heard enough of it. But that's how the station stays on the air. When you contribute during this show, it's a way of making sure this show does stay on the air, doesn't get shifted around more, that we can do all these diverse things.
And you know, one thing I've always said about the show is that one thing that's different about our show when it comes to Pledge Drive, and I'm going to say it, you know, compared to other shows on the station, and especially public television.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't break out the best and brightest. We don't bring you the best of shows during here.
No.
You're hearing, for better or worse, how you want to say it, you're hearing the same old program you're going to hear of whether or not we're asking for money.
That's right.
Yes, we're not putting on airs and giving you the best stuff.
Exactly.
We don't consider the sweeps weak.
Yeah.
Because, you know, break out the good stuff on that other.
On television, I only see Peter, Paul, and Mary, you know, let's play three songs and spend 20 minutes going, do you really like this kind of music? Here's an old fart that used to listen to this music, and they want to give you a tote bag for sending in your pledge of support. You know,
I mean, if you want a tote bag, that's great. But, you know, we got better things like programming.
Yes. The only good thing about when they do the public thing on there is, you know, when the Channel 8 goes into the pledge drive, you do see a lot of gays on television because Ernie Moose is everywhere.
That's right.
And they don't even do all their pledging out of Houston. You know, there's some of these generic ones that are off in some other city.
How come he rates more than one show on that network? on that
because
show.
He's the openly gay Ernie for PBS.
Yep. Right.
I still remember a couple of years ago when during the film festival, I went up to him and I said, you know, you keep showing up these events and people are going to talk. And
I think goes, I irritated
they already
him the
are.
I think I irritated him when he came to visit us.
But 713-526-5738.
We would love that $500 pledge. Then we would shut up.
Yes.
And yes. So right now what we're going to do is we're going to give you a little intro for the poetry section. Have we come up with a strip name for this yet?
No, and I keep forgetting to think about it.
What did you say?
Show name.
A show name for the poetry segment. So the light bulb will go on eventually.
Okay.
We're still figuring out what the show is, probably as part of that.
Yeah. So, hey, call on your suggestion.
There you go.
Calling a suggestion.
Hey, yeah, we'll take auction her. Off a name.
There you go.
A friend That's of mine right. came up with one, but, you know.
Tigger.
He looked at me like I was kind of...
He pulled your crazy. Plug and my earphones went off.
I know. It sometimes does that. I know. I bet Tigger or Jaime could come up with a good name for the poetry segment.
So, yeah, do that. You know, call in your pledge of...
The support and your, you know, name. Your, whatever name.
Well,
you
let's
think.
Say you can call in suggestions for names.
There you
we
go.
We reserve the right to sort of choose the appropriate one because.
And that number would be
713-526-5738, 713-JAM-KPFT. This is KPFT. Keep playing fag tunes.
Yeah.
And we do that so well.
So let's get
unlike that so funny show that gay and lesbian light show that's going to be on Saturday night from 10 to midnight, we play queer music by queer artists.
That's right.
Where queer and from the word go.
And the next song coming up is deeply religious, too.
Okay.
It talks about baptism.
Ooh.
It's like dying.
So, let's go to the music and come back with the poetry segment. This is Rufus Wainwright, someone we don't play enough on this show.
Yes.
At all, really. Gay Messiah.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. '70s porn, wearing tube socks for style and such an innocent smile. Better pray for yourselves. Better pray for yourselves. 'Cause the gay coming, he will fall from the stars to
here we are with the Poetry Hour, as of yet unnamed.
Hello, how you doing?
So it's me, David Lejeune, Bobby Pagano, better known as
Merlin.
And then our guest today is Tom Burris.
Yes, hello.
Yes, and he's a wonderful young poet who also happens to live downstairs from me, so that was good.
And he's a happy little cutie.
Get a fresh, young perspective on what poets have to say. So anyway, but to start off the show, one of the original ideas for the show was one of the reasons I played the Rufus Wainwright is one of the things he's talked about is how there's incredible wealth of gay artistic heritage that is somewhat getting lost. In terms of one of the people he particularly mentioned was Jean Cocteau, who was a French poet and filmmaker and painter and a little bit of everything. He did an amazing amount of things.
Yes.
And he was, in a sense, a gay messiah because before there was such a thing as out, he was out. All through his career, it was very evident to everyone that he was gay, that his lovers, he could even be said to be a forerunner of gay marriage because his relation with Jean Marais, who was a star of a lot of his films, Beauty and the Beast, Orpheus, was very well known. I mean, they went everywhere as a couple and stayed together for a long, long time from the time they met each other. So he was a gay messiah. And, you know, we honor all the people from Stonewall, and rightly so, but a lot of the artists, you know, in the sort of rush to assimilate into the middle class, they're kind of getting, and there was such a disconnect with the AIDS and everything that a lot of the gay heritage of creativity is not being passed down. So anyway, so I'm going to do a little bit of history lesson on Jean Cocteau. And he was born in the late 1800s, and he was born into a wealthy bourgeois family, and by the age of 16, he was already having his poems read at salons and becoming famous even then. And by 1917, Diaghilev brought the Ballet Russe with Nijinsky and everything to Paris. And
try saying that name five times fast.
There you go. And when Cocteau asked him what he wanted him to do, he said, "Astonish me." And so he wrote the text, and Pablo Picasso.
No pressure there.
No, did the sets, and they were the beginning of Cubist Surrealist. It was one of those events that was considered so outrageous that there was more or less a riot, like a Jim Morrison kind of riot at the end of it, and Apollinaire had to usher Cocteau out because people wanted to physically attack him because it was so outrageous.
So worked up about things.
And he did a lot of things like he helped launch the popularity of jazz in France by playing drums in a jazz band and really helping promote Louis Armstrong's early career over there. And he did, when films first happened, he did one of the first surrealist films, The Blood of the Poet, and through his own ingenuity came up with a lot of incredible special effects when there was no special effects, so you could say he was almost the father of some of the special effects. And he was somewhat known as
George Lucas before his time.
Yeah, one of them. I mean, there were other people, of course, who did a lot, but I mean, in terms of that no budget, skinnier pants, let's just create it out of pure ingenuity,
right.
He was brilliant at that. Let's see, I wanted to read a bit of a comment out of a wonderful book of drawings of his erotic work, which if this was TV, I couldn't show it to you.
Yes, so, definitely could not show it to you.
And a woman named Annie, I can't remember how to pronounce her last name, wrote, "In the history of mankind, freedom always precedes convention. I believe Jean Cocteau was a man who managed to stay free. In particular, he had no respect for the arbitrary frontiers imposed by civilizations. In his sketches and finished drawings on explicitly gay themes, he was not afraid to exaggerate the manhood of his models. The fury of the spasms he evokes exceed by their way, by very extravagance, any simply pornographic meaning. To succeed in rendering nature's boldest inventions in drawing requires a great deal of talent, especially in the handling of the line. Cocteau was a born virtuoso. His pencil line was always alive and ready to embrace each new inflection without the slightest sign of second thoughts. There was nothing added afterwards which might spoil the purity of his energy. As a result, his erotic drawings are exempt from all vulgarity, introducing us instead to a world liberated from the ugliness of reality, a space that lies beyond all that is merely sensible, something like that. It's word cut off.
I think vulgarity is much much as beauty is in the eye of the beholder.
Exactly.
I mean, there is particularly in that. I mean, by my standards, the pictures that are in that book would be tame.
Right.
I mean, they're drawings. They're and they're.
They're very archetypical.
They're very simple. Yeah. They're very. It's not
elegant.
There's not. Yeah, it's very elegant. It's very, and it. There's not a lot of you know, the lines are simple. It's not.
But the
every
heat,
little shading, every
but
little.
The heat and the enthusiasm
and the
pure eroticism.
The
yeah, I mean
exactly.
They're incredibly
Absolutely.
Sexy.
You get the point, and it's, and I mean, and sometimes I think. It brings to mind that, you know, sometimes some people want to create something and they want to do, and you know, they want to do big and flashy, and yet the real art form is often in the simple.
Right.
You know, in the pure and simple.
Absolutely. Let's see, and he also, there was one of his primary inspirational experiences was when he was in school in the Lycée. Here's a little quote from the book. When he was a pupil at Lycée Concordiscet, my greatest French pronunciation, Jean Cocteau fell under the spell of his schoolmate Pierre D'Argelos, who had taken it upon himself to initiate his friends into the pleasures of sex. Imagine the deeply troubling impact a boy like D'Argelos could have on the lives of unformed youths who were greedy for love, knew nothing of the enigma of the senses, and had nothing to protect them from the terrible blows the sensitive soul inevitably receives from the supernatural sex of beauty. Mm-hmm. And that's his writing about the story. And anyway, and this became, he became the archetype of a lot of his drawings, eventually sort of evolved him into an angel because also he was killed because there was a snowball fight and someone threw a rock, snowball that had a rock in it, and it killed the boy in the snow. And this image turns up again and again in his movies and his work.
Yeah.
And he did this again. There was a young man named Raymond Radiquet who ended up writing novels and dying at a young age. And he also was someone that Cocteau put out there, and then of course Jean Marais, and in modern times Philip Glass has done an opera and a dance piece and actually two operas to three of the movies. So anyway, a little bit more I wanted to actually read. I forgot a poem that I had of his, but I'm going to read him talking about
before poetry. You get to that, we have one other thing that needs to be done.
Yes.
It's that time.
Oh, it's that time. Yes,
it's that time. I got to break in here for a minute, let
Absolutely.
Everybody know that you're listening to After Hours Queer Radio with Attitude on 90.1 KPFT Houston and 89.5 Galveston, as always on the World Wide Web at kpft.org. Now read to your heart's content.
Oh, yeah, I'll get used to
you
the
do
idea.
You did that so well.
Thank you. I'll get used to the idea that on the hour we need to do that.
Yeah. Anyhow.
Okay, so, and again, there's this, we can, this is subjects to be discussed, but, so these, I just looked through some of the books he wrote and took out some quotes and pieced them together, so. It is the custom to represent poetry as a languid lady veiled and reclining on a cloud. This lady has a musical voice and everything she says is a lie. And now have you ever experienced the surprise of being brought suddenly face to face with your own name as if it belonged to someone else, seeing, as it were, its shape, hearing the sound of its syllables, with eyes and ears undulled by long familiarity? The thought that a tradesman, for example, does not know a word which seems so familiar to us opens our eyes and unblocks our ears. A wave of the wand restores the commonplace to life. The poet does not dream, he counts. But he is walking on quicksand, and from time to time he plunges his leg into the jaws of death. Even while the poet is in the act of creation, his poem runs 1,000 mortal risks. A bather in danger of drowning and not knowing how to swim invents the art of swimming. A poet, in order to save his poems, reinvents all the old familiar devices. He remembers how to work them and begins again. He is possessed by 1,000 devils whom he must obey. These mysterious laws stand in the same relationship to the old laws of versification as do 10 games of chess played simultaneously to a game of dominoes. But our player involves himself in increasingly subtle combinations where no one can follow him, and amongst which he is in danger of getting lost one day.
You know?
Yes?
Having read the very first part of that, that lovely sort of, you know, analogy of what poetry is like, is given to being like the woman in the I can't help but wonder what if he were alive today, what he would think of slam poetry.
You know, I
bet he'd love that.
I think he would, and he also really had an appreciation of African culture, which is one thing I didn't mean in terms of the jazz and dance and Josephine Baker. He knew everyone. I mean, Isidore Duncan, Josephine Baker, high culture, low culture. He loved art.
And Josephine Baker got away with some stuff in her day.
Oh, didn't she, though? Yes.
Anyhow.
And Isidore Duncan, too, you know.
But, you know, she didn't have a good history with scarves.
No. It's a great way to go. It was time, somehow.
Anyhow.
So anyway, a little bit more. He gets used to this, however, and soon looks upon it as quite normal, just as people with heart disease are not alarmed by the severest attack of palpitations. Poetry, then, implies a predisposition to the supernatural. The hypersensitive atmosphere in which it envelops us sharpens our secret sensibilities and causes us to put out feelers which probe into the depths which our official senses ignore. The scents which rise from these forbidden regions make our official senses jealous. They rise up in revolt, exhaust themselves, attempted to work which is beyond their to do work which is beyond their power, and the individual is overcome by a marvelous confusion. Beware, who finds himself in such a state may see miracles in everything. Poets live on miracles. They happen on the slightest pretext, apropos of anything, great or small. Objects, desires, sympathies place themselves spontaneously under their hands. For their sake, the incoherencies of fate take on a rhythm of their own. They live for a time like kings, but let a miracle fail to happen and their nervous tensions relax, their senses calm down again. It is as if the magic ring had fallen from their suddenly shrunken finger. These are painful periods. Poetry, like a drug, continues to act, but it turns against the poet and torments him in a series of misadventures. The consciousness of death, which was to him what the pleasure of giddiness is to speed, sickens him with a spasm of sudden fall. One day, the finger grows fat again, and the ring returns to its place, and miracles happen once more. Let's see, a little bit more, and then we'll get it. Okay. A poem should be made to cast off, one by one, all ropes attaching it to whatever was the source or motive of its creation. Each time the poet cuts a rope, his heart beats. When he has cut the last one, the poem detaches itself and rises unaided like a balloon, carrying its own beauty with it, severing all connections with earth. Dreaming and dreaminess may be left to the poet who has no poetry in him. For poetry in no way excuses liveliness, childish pranks, penny toys, practical jokes, and the wild laughter in which poets indulge in the most incredibly melancholy way. The living language of dreams, the dead language of waking. We must interpret and translate. Genius is the farthest extreme of the practical. So, Jung Kuk Do is amazing. Don't let him get lost in the rush to the disco, because dancing is wonderful, and I'm sure he'd be out there on the dance floor if he were alive today and admiring the boys.
Probably mostly naked and
making beautiful drawings.
And drawing on other people is probably what he would be doing. Yeah. It's like, you know.
Yeah. So that's our first little history lesson, and there will be more Walt Whitman from the MBB letters.
Yeah.
And just a couple of more things. Here's my favorite quote that I came across by him.
Hey.
We have in our keeping an angel who we are continually shocking. We must be this angel's guardian. And then last but not least, one must sit down first. One thinks afterwards. In other words, if you're going to do it, you got to do it. So there you go. There's
very cool.
First history lesson in gay art and poetry. So
yay.
On with the show.
On with the show. We have a guest.
We have a guest indeed.
We have another guest.
Yes, I do. A very quiet guest.
Yes. This is his first live. He's done other things on the radio, like sing and record things, but this is the first time he's ever gone live on the air. This is the first time he's read his poems publicly, and I had to sort of blackmail him into it a little bit. Not really blackmail, but
Get out the
play
pictures,
upon. Yeah.
The Polaroids are still, you know.
So you're 21, Robert?
Yes, I am.
He's 21 and
old.
He doesn't look a day past 30. It's fabulous.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
He's a handsome, red-headed, bearded young lad.
Yes.
So Tom.
Yes.
What do you got for us?
What do you got for us? You want to just start off with something?
Sure. Whenever I write, I usually don't write with any sort of style. It's usually a very childlike theme that I go with. And so this first one is actually about a teddy bear.
That is a style.
Well, it's not a style that I've ever seen written in a book that I've noticed.
That's what's called a personal style, which Mr. Cocteau definitely believed in.
It is your style.
Anyway, I'm sorry. On with the poems.
Well, this one would be called Teddy's Love. It's very rhyming. Listen to your heart, my child. It's calling you today, asking you to voice the things you've never dared to say. Think of things you can't let go, then whisper them to me. I'll keep them secret, dark, and safe for all eternity. When you squeeze me so tight, I know what it is you fear, but the untold past cannot come to get you while I'm here. So keep me close and don't let go until you feel all right, because I'm always going to hold you in the middle of the night. And that would be the end of it.
Lovely.
Yeah. It's a poem that has been written by me very many times. Each one is completely different, and this was the last time that I had written it. And it's certainly not the last one that I'll ever write, but for some reason I'm very drawn toward childhood and the past and teddy bears and things that are security.
When I write, you know, once I've written something, I usually do very little alteration of whatever it is I've written.
Well, I don't alter.
It sounds to me like your thing is like. Is like changing it with each, you know, as time passes on in bits and pieces, perhaps.
Well, I don't consider it very much altering, because each time that I write, I'm writing either from my viewpoint or someone else's.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I never rewrite the same poem from my viewpoint or from the same person.
Well, you know, I've been shaping up my poetry files later, and so there's like hundreds of poems. And one of the things I find is there are certain ideas and themes, and I could sort of put together a stack of poems that are all about the same thing, but every time I learn something about that or I'm engaged by that idea again, I come at it from another angle. Yeah. So you could say it's the same poem over and over again, but it's a different nuance, something else.
Yes.
You know.
Whenever I had first started writing, I had I only had stereotypes to work on because I hadn't seen any life yet.
Mm-hmm.
And so since I liked the idea of teddy bears, I would start writing from my own personal viewpoint, and then I would make up different pasts of different people and how that teddy bear would have reacted with them and how they would have felt toward it and what they might have told it. And so each one of those poems from the teddy bear is from a different person's viewpoint. So each one is its own in its own right. And none of them, I don't pull anything from them to make up the new teddy bear poems. So none of them are actually rewritten.
Cool.
They're just different.
It feels a little bit like, you know, if these walls could talk, if that teddy bear could talk. Because it's seen so many different aspects of.
Speaking of walls, we alternate poems here, so Tom is going to read some more later on, but we also got Ticker sent us in some poems. Tickers. And so he has one about being in the walls of his where he lives, and about on Valentine's Day. And so Bobby's going to read one, and I'll read one.
We have one here called Not a Hallmark Moment.
There we go. So here's for you, Tigger. We wish you could be here to read it.
Which is kind of interesting because earlier this week somebody famous on TV was saying that they don't do the Hallmark holiday kind of thing. So I think that's interesting.
There you go.
The name of this is... Yeah. 5 years indoors where the most exciting moment of the week was a dream. Saturated detail in highlights and shadows, outside walls and razor wire, the fantasy of freedom, turning East Texas into paradise, within reach of exotic locales, glamorous hotels, lavish lifestyles, Montrose clubs and Motel 6, saving money for boxes and boxes of lifestyles, liquor tabs and lonely men like me.
Mm.
Looking for friendship during the after hours, a moment or a lifetime, groping in the dark, groping for a light. I open my eyes and remember where I am, in prison, on Valentine's Day, alone.
Mm. Right. Well, just keep in mind that dreams can come true.
Absolutely.
And, our thoughts are with you, and thank you so much for that poem. It's very beautiful.
That's cool. Yeah.
So, Tom.
Yes.
What else have you got?
All right, this one I never did title. It was actually one that I hadn't even finished, and this evening, whenever I was figuring out what I was going to read, David had read it and decided that it was something that should be brought onto the show, so I finished it really quickly. I can't recall the moment when I let myself be free. I had lied so long and well, I couldn't see that I was me. My hopes and plans had been so wrecked that I thought there was no way that I'd ever let the darkness pass so I could see the light of day. Something changed within me. What exactly is something that I can't tell, but you had some part in it. I know your work so well. With the kindest grace, you find my heart and you see the truth within. When I stand before you, I'm a child without sin.
It's very beautiful.
And I'm not sure exactly where it would have gone if I had actually taken the time to write it out completely. And also, that first stanza was just a first draft in my
mind. Don't apologize for your work.
I'm trying not to apologize.
That's one thing you learn when you grow up to be an older poet. Because one of the things that I found very beautiful about that poem is that everybody universally goes through that to a certain extent, but especially gay men and women growing up in the society we do. I think it's something that people, almost everyone has gone through that experience of you know, how do I be true to myself? And it is generally through friendship and being reassured, you know, that you're not a monster after all, somehow.
And I know that it's not true of everyone, but for a lot of people that I've known and a lot of people that I'm still meeting, by the time that they come out, they've already told so many lies to cover up this and cover up that they can't really remember what the truth was to begin with.
Yeah.
And the only thing that I can say to that is, even though you don't remember what the truth is, it doesn't mean you have to.
When I was in high school, I was an incredible liar, because if I was lying about my basic sexuality, why not lie about everything?
So you don't have to continue the lie, and you don't have to tell the truth.
No,
either.
And now I send people with, I'm terrible about telling too much truth.
And then let me tell you, when he starts telling truth,
whoopsie.
It's interesting. We do live in a community that where people create who they are on a very, you know, we all create who we are on some level, but some of us create a completely false and complete, you know, shell of, mm-hmm. you know, we present to people who we'd like to see.
That's perfect. We find to make yourself with aspirations, so long as you don't make yourself the aspiration.
And generally speaking, most people are lovable for themselves. You know, and a lot of people are running around looking for love and trying to present this perfect image and, you know, end up not being loved. We have Kibitzer from the... You definitely know about all that stuff. So anyway.
No.
Yep. So anyway, I'm going to read, now I'll read one of Tigger's.
Cool.
This one's kind of enigmatic, and in a way it relates to what we were talking about being loved for yourself and how people sometimes won't let you get to know them. At least I think. I'm not sure what this is about, but it's called Plucked. So you are leaving everything the way it is, taking only your bloom with you. Already you are out of reach. You cannot be us or live us. Already I cannot imagine where you are. What I remember of love is the dead beauty of pressed flowers and dried petals. That's very beautiful, very poignant.
That's powerful.
Very good, yeah. Very simple, short, and simple, boy, very, bam, yeah. Right between the eyes.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. It's I as some of this has been being said, I've been thinking about, I was looking at one of the pieces. I have this tendency to write about people I know.
Mm-hmm.
Friends, family, people who get on my nerves,
mm-hmm.
which are often my friends and family.
Yeah.
But something struck me. The idea of I have a poem that I wrote about a friend of mine. Well, he was a friend once. And I don't know whatever happened to him. He sort of vanished off the map, and mm-hmm. he went through a really hard time. He was a waiter,
mm-hmm.
and thusly he ended up with a poem called "The Waiter."
Okay.
And it's funny. Another thing, what comes to mind is that a good friend of mine. Once said that I have this thing about exposing people through my poetry.
Sure, sure.
You
yeah,
know,
yeah.
Revealing their stuff, their, you know, through their...
Well, reveal away.
Putting the mirror up to them. And it says, you enter his world, and he welcomes you. This beautiful vision comes to serve, yet he would... gladly switch roles. Time and again, hunger, a convenient excuse to become voyeur to the dance of this noon hour Nijinsky. He returns to you asking, what will you have today? Your true wish is not on the menu. Would he understand all the things you have seen in eyes made of sapphire ice, emotional agonies the jailer of an inner self, begging to be set free. This sweet creature smiles a glorious mask, hoping to hide that which others must not see. He brings you your meal and you sense he struggles to consume the bitter plate he has filled for himself. You are drawn empathic to his suffering. You must let him know of the better times and better eating ahead. The grand feast you see in his infinite other reality. When he brings the check, you whisper a simple encouragement in his ear, perhaps as close as you will ever be to his struggling inner light. As you leave him, a little hope sparks that soon he will be dining at the most magnificent of tables, the one called life.
Oh, beautiful.
That was very, very nice.
Yeah. It kind of does relate to that other poem, too.
Yeah. I mean, it's... I try now, whenever I'm writing about somebody else that is an actual person, not to let judgmentalism fit into
try
it.
Try to just observe.
I have had moments where I have said something in a poem, and without using the names of the people who it was about knew they were being talked about, and they got it. They got, you know, they got that they were being talked about. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and at the time it was probably not the nicest thing I could have done.
Well, it depends. I mean, because, I mean, a certain amount of poem is just, poems, I think, is just someone, you're working out things for yourself.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's about them. I mean, especially because I've definitely written poems when I was upset with people.
Yeah.
And try to remain objective. But, you know, in essence, I was kind of venting.
Yes, we should definitely ask a mutual friend of ours about how I write things when I'm venting in his direction.
So I'm gonna read one that I had partially written just as kind of a little exercise, and then it turned into something. And it was partially written, and I ran across it when I was kind of working on my files again, and I finished it. So, and it kind of fits in with the gay society kind of theme and relationships and, you know, how they work or don't work. So it rhymes. Johnny Black has gone gray from hanging out with Johnny White, who's slowly disappearing from sight as they make love all of each and every day. Johnny Red's gone purple now with all the empathy he has for Johnny Blue, who's completely manic, suicidal, sad, and purple too, mixed up and upset in their own romantic Dachau. Johnny Green has finally gone yellow from bringing out everything in him that's blue to try to win the heart of Johnny Red, too, when he's being untrue, who takes to tease a closet sedative, passive-aggressive fellow who's always at odds with Johnny Rainbow, who's out to include every Johnny he can, even Susie Q for the make of her bisexual man, out to make over every John into another Johnny he loves so. Johnny Iridescent will always change on you. Beauty or the Beast, it all depends on what light you see him in. Goes from pee you off to your best sexy friend now and then. I can't say that we're on the air.
Yeah.
Claims he can't help that every aspect of him is true. Johnny Orange is so brightly lit he glows. Stand out in every crowd and is always fun, though nothing rhymes with him. He goes with everyone, every way, all the time, everywhere, and doesn't care who knows. Johnny after Johnny stands on every corner of your local gayborhood and dances disco with all the other Johnny clones, thinking he's the best, though there's not much difference between one of him and the rest. So, I'm really enjoying Fred and Get Going while the going is good.
Yeah. What I love about that is that recurring theme of the Johnny.
Oh, yeah. Well, Johnny Surabaya and Johnny Be Good and Go, Johnny, Go. And
and every
here's Johnny.
And every John.
Oh yeah.
That everybody, you know, guy who told you his name was John, that you know, who ended up disappearing the next day.
Oh yes, yes, that, yes. John Smith.
Yes, the inimitable John Smith.
Yes. Yeah. And Pocahontas. So, yeah. Tom.
So.
Grace us with another one.
Alrighty. And this one would be titled Troubles from a Younger Time. This is one that I probably had thought about for years and years, but I couldn't find a way to say it. And finally, after long enough, I guess my own problems and everything had cleared up enough so that I could step back and see the entire picture, and nothing was blocked off from me. Nowhere Can a Secret. I also have to say that this first part was taken from Dean Koontz, from one of his books.
The Master, the Classics.
Yes. So many of my poems start off for me reading something else or hearing something else, and it gives me a thought, and I just run with it.
Yeah, he's a wonderful writer.
Yeah. And so this first part came from one of his books, I don't know which one. Nowhere can a secret keep, always secret, dark and deep, half so well as in the past, buried miles deep to last. I dare not choose to linger here, my mind is crippled with the fear of what you'll find in years gone by, and what you won't, it makes me cry. My scars are old, they might not heal, my wall of lies begins to peel, my shames and pains are shadows now, but to lose them I will not allow. I think I'll make a brand new start, I'll keep these secrets in my heart, out of my mind so I'm not misled to speak the words I never said. I'm standing now, out in the sun, living life and having fun, leaving all my doubts and woes in the past where no one knows. To leave them there would not be good, I'll work them out just like I should, but until that time I'll fake a smile and escape my pain a little while.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Again, very universal. Do you realize how charming it is for someone your age to be talking about when I was young and years ago?
Well, whenever I speak that way, it's, like I said, it's written in a very childlike aspect because you might see two children playing and one of them says, I'm 3 years old today. And another one will be like, oh, well, that's nothing, I'm four. And so all of these are usually written with that frame of mind mind.
So it's very much like, you know, you've come to this point in your life and you still have to fit that part of that age into this person who is now an adult. Mm-hmm. You know, you still...
And so many people, so many people can sit and think back and realize that there was a chapter in your life, and then it closed, and then it kept on going and going.
Well, and I think there's a certain we're generally raised and taught to sort of not know ourselves, to ignore parts of ourselves, and I think that it's not malicious in lying; it's just simply ignorance. And once we are brave enough to interact with people and get out in life, and some people just naturally do that, then all of a sudden you sort of are looking in the mirror and your actions have consequences. And all of a sudden you go, oh, that's who I am. And, you know, a lot of times stuff that you swear you're not like that and you wouldn't do that, years later it's very much what you were avoiding. And I'm not talking about just sex either. Just, you know... Just somehow, the image you've created that you want to be, and then how that sort of melds into the reality
of
who you are, actually, who you become. So
the and it's interesting in that there's so many people who have. There are so many people who have no idea how beautiful they are.
Oh yeah,
and I don't mean on. I'm not just talking the physical level. I'm talking that there is a part of them which, if they would just let it be, just let it be a part of their everyday thing, mm-hmm. you know, show it to people, you know, they could really just shine. They could
absolutely.
Really just, I mean, and they could get past a lot of their own hang-ups and a lot of their own stuff. I have a piece here that I wrote about a friend of mine who, at the time, everybody thought they were beautiful. Everybody thought, you know, but what he saw was never, and even to this day, this person, you know, on the rare occasion that I see this person at all, they're still a bit, mm-hmm. you know, affected by other people's perceptions of
sure.
them.
Well, you, I mean, it's not necessarily a bad thing always.
Oh.
I mean, you got to get feedback. So,
well,
but anyway.
Well, yeah.
But yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
This one's called Stronger Now. He is beautiful, this angel floating with iron wings. His smile hides truths left behind. Part angel and playful fairy, forced from the magical garden much too soon. Once this beauty found something which looked for all the world like love, but with brass talons, hurtful speech beset self-esteem, tearing it away from the fragile ego of youth. Echoes of past agonies dance acoustic inside a beautiful head. Few get to see the poet's soul wrapped sometimes too well in designer labels. Others too often see and seek the surface. And he too finds himself drawn to such men, safer to play in shallow waters than the dangers of deeper oceans. Strange how those with true inner beauty rarely see it in themselves. Others must point it out to them. He is not the little boy of so long ago. He is so very much more. Stronger and more beautiful for having danced in the flames of emotional redemption.
Beautiful. Yeah, that definitely rings true. Well, we're kind of going to wrap up in a minute there, so we can have some open mic. We can have all
Jimmy
our.
Jimmy's shaking his head no.
No, but no.
Yeah.
Who's oh, wait, so. Anyway. But anyway, I wanted to let you know that it looks like next month our guest is going to be, I can't remember his last name, but Tadakus is what he goes by. He's hosted the open mic poetry at Helios, and he's incredibly entertaining. And he does this hilarious imitation of this woman poet named Anne Sexton, who is just so depressing, and he does this great impression of her smoking a cigarette. And he's hosted karaoke at Guava Lamp and travel selling art, and is just a really wonderful, vivacious person. And he'll be on next month. He's having a book coming out, and so that will definitely be upbeat and entertaining.
And what's interesting with him, and I know we're talking about him in advance and mm-hmm. all that, but it's I've listened to so much of his stuff, and so much of his stuff is just from. It's memories of a moment.
Oh yeah.
And it's always, and he paints a picture so clear of what everything looks like in that moment.
Yeah, I mean, he takes you there.
You can see the place that he's describing in it, and it's just a beautiful thing. And he's and the feeling that's happening to him when he's in that place.
Yeah.
And I love that. I love that he's
So anyway, Tom, you want to read one more? You got another one, right?
Yes.
And so we can close out with our another one from our young guest. And it was really it's wonderful having, you know, a fresh point of view, you know. So,
well, thankfully this last poem is upbeat.
Congratulations on losing your virginity in terms of on air and reading in public.
Oh, well, thank you. I was just dying to have it happen.
Chris's eyes perked up with his eyebrows shot up with the virginity
issue. You should have seen how nervous this one was outside.
Yes.
Folks, you should have seen it.
No more fingernails.
So anyway.
But this last one is called Waiting. I'm not sure exactly where it came from. I don't even know when I wrote it, but I'm sure it would have been in the last year or so, because I've had much more of an upbeat outlook on life in this past year than I've ever had.
Is this the one you just finished? No. Okay, that's right. No, that was one of the first ones. Yeah. He sent them to me to print out, so anyway.
And so this one is called Waiting. People like to think that beauty exists just below the skin, but I can see all types of things buried deep within. Just like diamonds, your true face lies far beneath your lies. People miss it all the time. They can't see it with their eyes. It's hard to see you hide and put your dreams upon a shelf, but the saddest thing of all is that you no longer see yourself. I can see you in your shadows, though you try to hide and cry. I can feel and hear your laughter. I can see how high you'll fly. I can only hope that in time, you'll begin to see how great you really are. Then when you pass the mirror, you'll see what's really there. Only then, when you found out that you're as wonderful as you can be, will you be able to open your heart and finally find me. I've spent a long time waiting and trying to find a way to make you show your face to me each and every day. When you do, I'll be here to catch you as you take wing, because the only thing I wish for most of all is to hear you start to sing.
Beautiful. That is fresh and sweet and hopeful.
I know, and perky.
And perky, yeah.
And wouldn't I just love to know who that was about?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
there
you?
We go. Well, it's sort of, the poems seem to all kind of fit together tonight. That was kind of nice. If you have feedback about what you'd like to hear, you know, constructive criticism, whatever, give us feedback, since we're just kind of feeling what this show needs to be and having fun with it.
Emphasis on the phrase constructive.
Yes.
That's new to me.
So if you think poetry is boring, well, that's, you know, not everything is a football game. But anyway, so...
You can send your feedback to After Hours,
right,
care of KPFT, 419 Lovett Boulevard, Houston, Texas, 77006. Or... Well, we'll be discussing double lot later, because we're going to talk about chaining.
I bet we are.
Or you can send us an email at afterhours@kpft.org.
Yes, and remember, we get to do experiments like this because it's listener sponsored. Give a call in if you you know, and all that, you know, with the same spiel.
There.
Just let us know you're out there. One more, you know, just pitch. Just please help keep this air radio show on this radio station on the air.
Please, you know, we ended one virginity during the show. We need someone out there to end a virginity for us.
We had a virgin last year. Last program call in.
Well, I mean, virginity as in, we haven't had anybody call.
I'll make my liberal pitch again. If you're out there and you're not gay and feeling really good about yourself because you're so open and liberal to be listening to a gay show and feeling comfortable about it, prove how liberal you are. Call during this show. So anyway, thanks for letting us go on and on with poetry.
We all love it,
and we hope you do too. Thanks. Yeah. Good night.
Take care.
All right, so I'm going to put a little music in your ear real quick, and then we'll do some roundtable and discuss the usual things. This is After Hours, Queer Radio with Attitude.
It was something you made. Now it's all
That was Whitney McRae, and the song was Hollow. This is After Hours Queer Radio with Attitude. Yada yada. Hey, pip, pip, pip. Where your CD back? There you go. It's time for a little kind of round table-ish.
Ish.
More ish than round.
But like 10 minutes-ish.
10, 15.
Yeah.
You know, it was a shame last week. You know, the news broke so late, we didn't get to... What?
So, nothing.
Nothing. You actually entered the room, so I was surprised and amazed.
More fun than a Hyclonic and Tijuana.
Most people are.
What?
I was so underwhelmed, he appeared. but, you know... We didn't get to talk about Dick Cheney because the news broke so late last week. As he shot his friend, best friend, acquaintance, depending on when you heard him talk about the person, his story changed. The funny thing is he got a ticket for not having the right stamp. And, you know, I checked on the Texas website. I couldn't find the lawyer shooting stamp anywhere.
And they need to make one, though.
And I didn't even know they were in season.
Their lawyers are always in season.
But, you know, yeah. Especially on the type of if he was going to shoot somebody and wanted to get away with it, he should have taken, you know, a former vice president with him because he was quail hunting.
Ooh.
I thought the exact same thing. I said, oh, damn.
That is so bad. So bad.
But so right. It feels so right. So.
Now, did you hear that today the lawyer apologized to... the vice president and
for
his
what?
For putting him through so much pain and emotional distress this past week.
Oh, stop. I may lose my dinner.
Well, I like how Fox News, they went in, they showed a picture of him during his press conference in front of the hospital.
Yeah.
And, I mean, they zoomed in and highlighted the wound area. I mean, the guy's 78. He already had enough wrinkles and craters in his face. That buckshot wasn't going to make much.
I know why he said it. It's like Ennis in Brokeback Mountain. If you can't fix it or whatever, you have to live with it.
Which I finally got to see the movie,
yeah.
Brokeback Mountain, last week. That was my Valentine's Day treat.
I loved that movie.
I wish I could quit you.
But
no.
The one thing, you know, I was expecting it was only taking like a 3-month or a year long. It's actually a 20-year experience, this movie.
Stop. I know where you're going.
What? No, I originally was thinking it was just like, you know, this summer thing that they did for 1 year. I didn't realize that the whole thing was supposed to be taking place over the 20 years.
Yes.
You thought I was going to talk about the spit and shove?
No.
Oh. Yeah, last month on Black on Black, they talked about the fact that there was the one sex scene was a spit and a shove. That was no spit. I've seen a quarterback put more saliva on his fingers to grip the ball. And that's not to make it slip, it's to make it stick.
Hey, when you're ready, you're ready.
Ouch.
And
yeah, well, you know, I don't think that was Jack's first time at the rodeo.
No. And, you know, I saw more, I think there was more straight sex than there was gay sex in there.
But yeah,
there was lots of gay cuddling and caressing.
Oh, yeah. It was so Lifetime, though.
It was, there may have been more straight sex, but there was more gay love.
Yeah.
Yes. Which is better.
It was, you know, it was not bad. I mean, it was one of those things, I went in expecting a lot different movie. It's a little slower than I thought.
I know, but you have all of that wonderful, all the mountains and the
scenery
and all of that is just, it's just beautiful.
Well, they've talked about how it's really a classic American movie.
It is.
I mean, it's like an old, it's like a 40s for 50s movie. There wasn't all, you know, ADD, let's blow up something every 2 seconds to the classic pace of an American movie, and that's what it is.
Yes.
Yeah, all I got to say to everyone who has seen the movie out there, I'm going to have to get my fishing license.
Are you going to get your quail hunting license?
Oh, boy.
Now, once you see the movie, you'll understand the joke about the fishing license.
Yes.
But, I mean, it was a very... it was an interesting thing, you know.
And it was true to form about the way life was in the 60s through the 80s, I guess. Actually, from the 50s through the 70s. Is more like it, yes.
Well, it goes to 83.
Okay.
It was real good.
It's just, you could not, in that time slot, in that part of the country, you could not live openly gay.
I do love the one phrase that Randy Quaid used in the movie. I didn't pay you to stem the rose.
Ooh.
It's like, very interesting euphemism
yes,
there.
Yes, it was.
Wow.
Yes, it was.
But no, the only bad part I've had is, you've got an Australian trying to lose his Aussie accent,
mm-hmm.
and Heath Ledger's Australian, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So to try and lose that Australian accent, he must have had a lot of cotton in his mouth.
Yeah, it looked like it. Actually, I think he was trying to portray someone who used tobacco.
In an interview, he said he wanted it to be a guy who. It was almost impossible for him to say anything, period. And he said he wanted it to be like every word was having to be punched out through leather, like punching through leather.
Yeah. So they did like they did with Mr. Ed. They put the peanut butter on his gums.
It was just very, it was difficult to understand him. And the weird part is he kind of looked like Glenn Campbell.
Glenn Campbell?
Oh, my goodness.
In I when I looked at it, I kept looking up there going, I'm waiting to hear Rhinestone Cowboy, because Glenn Campbell wrote it, but he didn't sing it. But, you know, I'm expecting that, or Wichita Lineman to come out of him, because every time I looked at him, it kind of had that kind of appearance.
I didn't get that at all.
He's sort of entered, you know, movie and theater and everything, history, as one of the great tragic characters of all time.
Yes.
But yeah, I think... Yeah, you talked about the accent and stuff. I find it absolutely remarkable when a famous person who has a noticeable accent about something from somewhere like England, Ireland, etc., so on, can do a role, and not once do you ever get a clue that their natural accent is. Way left of the
Nicole
one
Kidman.
Well, yeah. There was
Lucy Lawless. You gotta
remember there was what's his name that was in a lot of the Hitchcock movies that stuttered regularly, and when he went on stage, what was his name? I can't think of his name. Like Vertigo and some of those.
Cary Grant, Gregory Peck.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But anyway, he stuttered.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And throughout the movies, he talked normally.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah. In any interview, he stuttered, and I thought that's...
Mm-hmm. I saw a thing... the very first time, I was a big fan of Xena and, you know, Hercules and all that. The very first time I ever heard Lucy Lawless speak as Lucy Lawless, I was like... Whoa, where'd that come from? It's like, she has the mother of all New Zealand accents.
Well?
And I mean, and it's like, and you know, she goes through entire episodes, you know, of course she's, you know, speaking in four or five word phrases, you know. And
I was going to say her dialogue's not all that great.
Yeah.
Go.
You know.
The latest advocate is already asking... Is there going to be a sequel to Brokeback Mountain?
I certainly hope not. I certainly frelling hope not.
Frel?
What about frel? Well, it's better than what I could have said. The FCC would be rather upset with me.
I don't know.
What does he find? He after the death of... Jack, does he meet somebody and regret having lost him and then, you know,
who knows?
Finally comes out?
Does Ennis live all, you know, alone the rest of his life? Does he find someone else?
But I hope they don't do it.
Well,
sequels?
It depends upon the box office. It depends on the box office receipts.
They've been pretty damn good.
I know. That's why there's a good chance that there'll be a sequel.
If they can get Heath Ledger to do it.
No.
And then we'll have more discussion.
If he doesn't get nominated or get something, he's not going.
I think it would be better, since I see that films are like this are bankable, that there are more really, really, really decent... serious gay movies.
It might be good, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it could be good for us.
One cute thing I saw in there, if it's one of the things that you have to pay weird attention to movies. There's a scene in the movie where Jack, which is Jake Gyllenhaal's character, he's a tractor salesman towards the end of the movie. And
yes, you told me.
He's driving in the tractor with his son. And if you're not paying attention, you know, normally you'd be watching the two of them interacting in there. Well, I noticed the weird stuff, and the brand tractor was versatile.
Yeah. I love that. I like that.
That's beautiful.
I'm sure
that's a beautiful thing.
Only you, Chris.
The director's joke or something.
I bet. Yeah.
It was like one of those things. Like I said, normally if you're watching it, you're kind of zoomed in on the people.
I bet you were the only person in that theater laughing in that scene.
I saw the movie. I didn't notice it. I have no idea.
There wasn't a lot of people when I went to see it up at Willowbrook on Valentine's Day. There was. There's like three old women in the row in front of me.
Well, not exactly a Valentine's Day movie, you know, for the straight community.
Yeah, and then, for you either.
Two women who brought in a baby to a rated R movie.
Oh, my God.
I always love that when they do that.
I saw an eight-year-old at The Passion of the Christ. Nothing.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no. When I went and saw Underworld Evolution, halfway through the movie, this kid starts screaming like five aisles back. And this woman runs past. I don't know why he's doing this halfway through Underworld.
Yeah. Well, this baby was the kid that was so young. It was brought in a kid in a baby carrier.
Oh, no, this was like a 3 or 4 year old.
No, the one in my movie.
So yeah.
Yeah. As soon as he piped a noise, you know.
You said earlier a thing about sequels and stuff.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. There are some movies that should never have sequels, and there are some movies which should never, ever get a remake.
That's true.
Yeah. The examples that come to mind for me are, one, there should never have been more than one Halloween, one Friday the 13th, and one Nightmare on Elm Street.
And there should never be a remake or a sequel to Gone with the Wind.
And there should never,
God
blessed...
It was Broke with the Wind.
Remake of The Manchurian Candidate.
No.
Or how about the Shaggy Dog one that's coming out?
Wings, that actually sounds fun.
And actually, there should never have been a Rocky.
And he's getting ready to do another one.
5, 6, 7.
The original Rocky was an Oscar award winning film.
It really was good.
But you know, one thing about the box office thing is that, unfortunately, in America, you know, money's kind of the bottom line. And in terms of the gay community and just acceptance and people getting over it and used to it, bottom line is gospel. Box office is gospel.
Yep.
Some people believe box office before they believe anything else. So that's wonderful.
And yet
the pundits had to eat crow, and we proved it.
Mm-hmm. And yet what is remarkable about most of the movies that are nominated this year, speaking of box office, is the great majority of them are not from big studios. They're indie films.
Speaking of box office, our box office is bare tonight.
Yes.
You've got 30 seconds, ladies and gentlemen. Call in a pledge of support. Because, you know, if we go off of box offices, we ain't cutting it for this show.
I know.
We got the broke. We ain't got the broke back on this show.
Uh-oh.
Last shout-outs, everyone. 713-526-5738. Call in your last pledge of support.
Please.
Real quick.
Good night.
This is Jenny
Love
asking you to please call.
I love you.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're out of here. We will be back next week. Fourth, it's Leatherline. And... here we
community-based, listener-sponsored, commercial-free radio. This is Pacifica Radio, KPFT, Houston, 90.1 FM.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston.
If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.